Board to order.
I'd like to move for approval of the January 20th, 2006 minutes.
So moved.
So moved. Any of received reports, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve in block the following five agency reports as described in the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis. Item number 6, Department of Human Services and Oregon State Assistance Commission acknowledge receipt of report on the status of improving the utilization of available education benefits by Job Plus program participants as required by budget notes in Senate Bill 5584 and House Bill 5148. The subcommittee recommends that the Department of Human Services and the Oregon Students Assistance Commission return to the Emergency Board in June 2006 with information on the efforts of the interagency group to include members with marketing expertise and on potential employer outreach efforts. Item number 43, the Department of Transportation acknowledged receipt of the first two interim reports on implementation of the Oregon Innovative Partnerships Program. Item number 44, Department of Consumer and Business Services acknowledged receipt of report on the federally funded Senior Health Insurance Benefits Assistance Program. Item number 46, Public Employees Retirement System acknowledged receipt of a report on the preliminary crediting of 2005 earnings received through investments of the Oregon Public Employees Retirement Fund regular account as required by ORS 238.6705. Item number 47, Department of Administrative Services acknowledged receipt of a report describing compensation plan changes submitted as required by ORS 291.371. Your subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Any objections? Submission of federal grant applications in block, Representative Campbell.
Okay. Good morning, all. Put your seatbelts on. This is a long one. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve in block the following seven requests for approval to apply for federal grants as described in the Legislative Fiscal Office analysis. Item number 5, State Commission on Children and Families. Approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention in the amount of $541,200 for the Juvenile Accountability Block Grant. Item number 7, Department of Human Services. Approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the amount of $200,000 per year for the establishment of a state epidemiological outcomes work group to collect and analyze state data in order to ascertain the scope and extent of substance abuse and substance abuse-related problems in Oregon. Item number 8, Department of Human Services. Approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the amount of $325,000 per year for the establishment of strengthening treatment access and retention, state implementation cooperative agreements to improve the state's substance abuse out-treatment access and retention outcomes through improvements of service providers' clinical and business practices. Item number 9, Department of Human Services. Approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services in the amount of $2.3 million per year for the establishment of a Strategic Prevention Framework State Incentive Grant Program to be used to prevent the onset and reduce the progression of substance abuse as well as increase community-level prevention capacity. Item 24, Department of Agriculture. Approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Agriculture in the amount up to $300,000 for a nationwide program making funds available to states for specialty crop assistance. Item 29, Department of State Lands. Approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Commerce National Oceanographic and Atmosphere Administration in the amount of $245,000 for construction projects at the South Slough National Research Reserve. Item 39, Water Resource Department. Approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant to the U.S. Bureau of Reclamation in the amount of $28,000 for the development of a guidebook to assist irrigation districts with the completion of required water management and conservation plans. The subcommittee's recommendation is made with the understanding that if funds are awarded, the agencies shall return to the emergency board or the legislative assembly for approval of any necessary federal funds or federal as other funds expenditure limitation and position authority.
Any discussion? Any objections? Item number one, Secretary of State, Representative Boone.
Thank you. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $1.5 million to complete work on Phase 1 of the Election Business Systems Rewrite Project. The Help America Vote Act of 2002 was enacted by Congress to reform the nation's voting process. The Act mandates states and local governments improve voting systems and voter access. It also provides federal funding to develop and implement the improvements. The majority of this project will be financed with HAVA funds. The 2005 legislature passed House Bill 3458, which directed the Secretary of State to adopt an electronic filing system to be used for the purpose of reporting campaign financing. Phase one of the Election Business System Rewrite Project will meet that requirement. It is scheduled to be implemented by the January 1, 2007 deadline set in the statute. The $1.5 million request will fund the committee registration module, identify management security module, and work on other supporting modules. The campaign financing portion of the project is funded with a $700,000 general fund appropriation that was appropriated by the 2005 legislature. It was not eligible for HAVA funding since it only involves candidates for state and not federal offices. The elections fund has a sufficient cash balance to fund the increase, and no additional matching funds are required to complete the HAVA mandates. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Item number two, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on compensation plan changes for Investment Division staff. The Treasurer of the State of Oregon is authorized by law to establish compensation plans for his office. The Treasurer is changing the compensation plan for Investment Division staff effective May 1, 2006. The Treasurer used the results of an independent consultant study on compensation of investment professionals performing like functions with like responsibilities in the private and public sectors to develop a new compensation plan for investment officers in the Investment Division. The Treasurer worked with the Department of Administrative Services Human Services Management Division to ensure that the survey and its results were consistent with the state's approach to compensation reviews. The survey results showed a marked disparity between the current compensation plan and the marketplace. The Treasurer's new plan adopts a top-step salary for the investment officers that is the average between jobs for large private firms and large public funds. Large private funds and large public funds. The new compensation plan begins the investment officers at the first step. Additionally, the compensation plan changes the incentive plan from the existing maximum of 10% of salary to 30% of salary. The plan does raise the hurdle for qualifying for top incentive pay. The Treasurer will fund the current biennium cost of the compensation plan change from a combination of vacancy savings and savings from reduced contract costs for securities custodial services. Madam Co-Chair, the Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Item number three, Senator Schroeder, Department of Higher Education.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends Emergency Board increase the Other Funds Capital Construction Article 11G Bonds Expenditure Limitation established for the new steam plant utility switch construction at Oregon State University by $11,999,999. Increase the Other Funds Capital Construction Article 11F1 Bonds Expenditure Limitation by $16,999,999, and increase the Other Funds Capital Construction Other Revenues Expenditure Limitation established by $25,999,999, and acknowledge receipt of a report that bonds will be issued for the project before all the revenues, including federal funds, have been received by the State Board of Higher Education. Department is requesting permission to construct a new steam plant for Oregon State University. The new facility will supply all of the campus's heating needs and approximately half of its electrical needs. The request also includes an upgrade of the OSU electrical distribution system and a new telecommunications switching system. The existing central steam plant has been operating long beyond its expected useful life and is now failing. The legislature approved its replacement during the 2005 session, but required the department to bring a financing package back to the emergency board before construction began. Today's request is consistent with the project and financing parameters approved during the legislative session. Project expenditures would total $55 million, include a $39 million cogeneration heat and power facility, $11 million improvements to the campus underground electrical distribution system, and a new $5 million telecommunications switching system. The project will give Oregon State University a reliable heat and power system, reduce the campus's utility and operating costs, and reduce environmental impacts of providing utility services. Financing will be provided from a combination of 11G and 11F bonds, campus participation, grant donation funds, university reserves, and business energy tax credit proceeds. Debt service costs will be more than offset by reductions in OSU's utility and operating costs, generating an estimated $1.4 million per biennium of net savings compared to operating the current steam plant. Subcommittee members noted that the approval of COPs for this project should not be considered a precedent for using COPs for other department capital projects. Instead, this approval reflects the unique emergency situation that this project addresses. Subcommittee also understands that the university does not receive all anticipated grants and donations. It will redesign the project or finance it with additional internal resources and not seek additional state support for it. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request and acknowledgement of a report that bonds will be issued for the project before all matching funds are in hand.
Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Item number 4, Department of Higher Ed, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board establish a $4,705,000 other fund capital construction Article 11F bond expenditure limitation for the purchase of the High Street property, formerly called the Guard Publishing Building in downtown Eugene. The Department of Higher Education is requesting permission to purchase a facility in downtown Eugene that is currently leased to the University of Oregon. The property is located at 975 High Street, approximately 1 mile from the University of Oregon campus, and consists of three buildings sharing a common roof. It houses the university's printing and mailing services, some of its continuing education programs, facility services storage, and some university archives. The university has no immediate plans to change the use of the facility if it is purchased. The property's owners have offered to sell it to the university for $4,612,000, which is below the $6.5 million value determined in an independent appraisal. The facility represents a good value at the offered price, and the ownership of the property would shield the university from potential future rent increases. The purchase would be financed entirely with $4,705,000 of Article 11F bond. Debt service on the bonds, which would be an obligation of the university and not of the state general fund, would total $745,000 per biennium. This is comparable to what the university currently pays for lease payments, insurance, and taxes and fees on the building. Debt service would be paid from the same combination of fund sources that are currently allocated to finance building lease payments and taxes. The property is in an area of Eugene where redevelopment activities are occurring, thereby reducing the risk that its value will decline in the future. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 10, Senator Cordley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Before I read the committee report, Madam Chair, I'd like to take a point of personal privilege, if I may, to make an introduction. Seated on the front row is my son, Tyrone Waters. And I'd like to say a little bit about him, because his journey has been absolutely remarkable. And I'm very proud of his accomplishments. Ty is a Navy veteran. He served during the Persian Gulf era, first Persian Gulf era, 4 years in the Navy and then 4 years in the reserves. He currently serves as chair of an advisory council at the Oregon Advocacy Center, a group that makes policy recommendations to support a quality of life for people living with disabilities. He is employed as a recovery support specialist with Cascadia Behavioral Healthcare in Portland, and works with clients to help them with their goal and assessment planning, assist them with housing, employment, education, and building support for them in the community. And he has been employed with Cascadia for about 4 years now. Ty also participates with the street ministry at our church, Highland United Church of Highland United Church of Christ. He serves on the Multnomah County Quality Management Committee, and this is a group that makes recommendations to the county regarding client care and also reviews evidence-based practices. Tyrone is an example of what is possible for people living with mental illness. These are highly treatable brain disorders that, with the appropriate medication, treatment, and community support, allow people to live full lives, employed, and contributing to the community. Ty's visiting patients today at the Oregon State Hospital, which he continues to do to provide encouragement and support. And as you all know, my colleagues, there are many patients at the hospital who have no family support, have no one visiting them, and they do rely on this body to ensure that they live the highest quality of life possible while in our care. Wanted to make that introduction.
Welcome. Please get here this morning.
The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the Oregon State Hospital. In January, the Emergency Board approved a request from the Department of Human Services to allow $9.3 million from the Emergency Fund and increase the agency's federal funds expenditure limitation by $3 million to take three important steps to improve Oregon State Hospital patient safety and care. These actions are: undertake a capital construction project to remodel the sixth floor of the Oregon State Hospital facility in Portland, hire 30 additional clinical staff at Oregon State Hospital, develop 71 additional community-based residential placements. This will require four additional Office of Mental Health and Addiction staff. The Emergency Board also directed the Department of Human Services to return to the April meeting of the board to report on implementation progress. DHS reports that the architectural firm it hired to develop the construction cost estimate is now working on detailed plans to remodel the sixth floor of the Oregon State Hospital Portland facility. This information will be used in the request for proposal process to hire a contractor. National recruitment for the additional clinical staff has begun, and the department is working with the Psychiatric Security Review Board to plan and develop the additional 71 community-based residential placements. The committee did hear a concern expressed by staff in response to our questions that it will be very difficult to attract people to fill the positions that are now available because our salaries are very low. The subcommittee members requested information from DHS concerning non-clinical staff-to-patient ratios, the OSH pay scales for clinical staff compared to similar positions in other states or psychiatric care settings, the educational pipeline for health care workers in Oregon. The concern there is that we're not turning out enough people in the right clinical fields to fill positions that exist not just at the Oregon State Hospital, but also in other clinical settings in the state. The Department of Human Services agreed to provide this information to members of the subcommittee, and Madam Chair, your Human Services Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Objection? So ordered. Item number 11, Department of Human Services, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge a receipt of a report on services for children with developmental disabilities. The budget report for House Bill 5148, the primary budget bill for the Department of Human Services, DHS, included a budget note which requires DHS to convene a work group to review services for children with developmental disabilities and report on the work group's findings and recommendations. DHS indicates that the work group was formed last fall and includes a variety of stakeholders. The steering committee of the work group analyzed five main issues that are discussed in the report: eligibility for services, children with disabilities who are involved in the juvenile justice system, children with complex medical needs, children who reside in nursing homes, and increased funding for the family support program. Although the final report has not been completed, the work group is focusing on at least two important system changes: enhancement of services for children with both developmental disabilities and mental illness, and the development model of Medicaid waivers and rules to allow services to be offered in the least restrictive setting. Subcommittee members had hoped that the work group efforts were further along than they apparently are. The task at hand, to review a complex system of services for children with complicated disabilities and to offer recommendations for change, is difficult and will require time. As a result, the subcommittee is anxious for another progress report to be presented to the Emergency Board in June. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the department's report and directing DHS to present a progress report on the work group's efforts at the June meeting of the Emergency Board.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 12, Department of Human Services, Senator Winters.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of report on implementing the Medicaid Part D prescription drug benefit. Various members of the 2005 Legislative Assembly asked the Department of Human Services to report to the Emergency Board on a regular basis about implementing the Medicare Modernization Act, better known as MMA. The most important provision of the MMA is the prescription drug benefit that it adds to the Medicare program, Medicare Part D, which began on January 1, 2006. DHS delivered its first two reports on this issue at the last two Emergency Board meetings. 54,000 dual-eligible clients, those eligible for both Medicare and Medicaid, were transferred from the Medicaid prescription drug program to the Medicare's drug benefit on January 1. DHS reports that the transition went smoothly for most of them, but not for all. Some were unable to receive their prescription drugs. Problems have occurred in three main areas. One, drug plans could not verify enrollment. Two, plans did not have or could not retrieve data verifying clients' low-income subsidy eligibility. And three, pharmacies were not able to use the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services system to accurately determine prescription drug coverage. To help these clients, DHS has worked diligently to resolve problems. In addition, the governor authorized DHS to begin paying for medications for dual-eligible clients who were unable to get their drugs through Medicare. So far, the department has logged nearly 4,500 claims. The federal government will repay Oregon for most of these costs, as well as some of the additional administrative costs. DHS continues to have concern about the Medicare Part D program design and its impact on low-income beneficiaries. Many of these persons are required to pay copayments now, when under Medicaid, they made no copayment. DHS will continue to report on this important issue. Your subcommittee commended DHS on its efforts to resolve the Medicare Part D problems and recommends acknowledging receipt of the department's report.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 13, Department of Human Services, Representative Richardson.
Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board authorize transfers of general fund appropriations, increase other funds expenditure limitation by $12,833,844, increase federal funds expenditure limitation by $26,667,935, and approve the establishment of a net 36 positions, which represents 21.93 FTE, or full-time equivalent employees, for the Department of Human Services rebalance plan for the 2005 through 07 biennium, but defer other actions on elements of the department's rebalance plan. The Department of Human Services, DHS, now projects a net $136.2 million general fund budget shortfall for the 2005-07 biennium. This is down $31.8 million from its January estimate, but is still more than 5% above the legislatively adopted budget. The three primary causes for the shortfall are higher program caseloads and costs, the current biennium impact of revenue and cost allocation adjustments made for the 2003-05 budget, and federal Medicaid match rate changes. The DHS reports caseload growth has moderated in Oregon Health Plan, the OHP, and in Temporary Assistance to Needy Families, TANF, programs, although senior long-term care caseloads are much higher. Other funds revenues, including tobacco taxes, are expected to increase, reducing the general fund costs. The Federal Medicare Modernization Act clawback payments will be less than previously projected. DHS noted, however, that the $136.2 million estimate will certainly change over time due to both typical caseload fluctuations and the still undefined federal changes in Medicaid and TANF program regulations. DHS is taking action to help address its fiscal forecasting and program management issues. Preliminary recommendations from an operations review team led by the state controller will be available later this month. The department's implementation plan will follow soon thereafter. It is expected to include three-month, one-year, and longer-term work plans. Added oversight is being added to caseload forecasting to improve reliability and validity. Work is underway to help assure eligibility determinations are done consistently and fairly across the state for the Oregon Health Plan, TANF, and senior programs. Program areas are moving forward with management actions and administrative savings approved by the Emergency Board in January and looking for even more operating efficiencies. The subcommittee's recommendation is based on approval of a limited budget adjustments for various grants, technical adjustments, and transfers that have no net effect on DHS's general fund budget, since a complete solution to the budget shortfall is beyond the Emergency Board's authority and financial resources. The subcommittee recommends deferring action on issues with general fund impact until the full legislature next meets. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objection? You object?
I object.
Representative Krupp objects. Any other? Item number 14, Department of Human Services, Representative Hannah.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Members, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the status of the maintenance of effort for federal temporary assistance to needy families, child care and development, and vocational rehabilitation funds. In January 2006, the Emergency Board asked the Department of Human Services and the Department of Administrative Services to report on maintenance of effort requirements for these three federal programs. If states do not meet maintenance of effort requirements, they can lose federal funding or incur other financial penalties. Oregon has used eligible general fund expenditures and refundable tax credits to meet the maintenance of effort requirements for each program through the federal fiscal year 2005. This has become more challenging over time as general fund support for some programs has decreased. The TANF maintenance of effort level could increase in the future if Oregon is not able to meet TANF work participation rates under recent federal changes. Also, as Oregon tries to maximize the amount of federal funds it matches for vocational rehabilitation services, the higher general fund expenditures now create higher maintenance of effort requirements later. The Department of Administrative Services, the Department of Human Services, and other affected agencies will continue to monitor the maintenance of effort requirements for compliance and potential budget impacts. The subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report.
Discussion? Objection? Item number 15, Office of Private Health Partnerships, Senator Wynn.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board defer action on a request to allocate the remaining $1.1 million special purpose appropriation to the Department of Human Services. The budget report for the Entrance Pool Governing Board, now the Office of Private Health Partnerships, directed the agency to report on negotiations with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, concerning maintenance of effort requirements for FHIAP, FIOP. In addition, the budget established a $4 million special purposes appropriation that could be dispersed to either the Office of Private Health Partnerships or to the Department of Human Services, dependent upon the progress and outcomes of these negotiations. At its October meeting, the Emergency Board allocated $2.9 million of the appropriation to the OPHP for the use in the FIOP program. Yesterday, the Office of the Private Health Partnerships and the Department of Human Services reported that the CMS responded favorably through a fax letter and email to Oregon's request to meet a modest portion of the FIOP maintenance of effort requirement with Children's Health Insurance Program expenditures. As a result of this unexpected approval, executive branch representatives modified their request of the E-Board, asking that the board allocate the remaining $1.1 million of the special purpose appropriation to DHS for use in CHIP. These funds would be used in the CHIP to increase eligibility from 6 months to 12 months and would allow DHS to offer health insurance to over 9,000 more children. The subcommittee had mixed feelings about this request. On the one hand, all of the members appreciate and support the goal of providing medical insurance to children. On the other hand, members are concerned about the roll-up costs for this enhancement for the next biennium. And the fact that final approval from CMS, although promised, had not yet been received. Moreover, there had not been an opportunity to thoroughly review the modified special terms and conditions from CMS related to this request. On balance, the majority of the subcommittee believes that deferring the action on this request until the June meeting of the Emergency Board is the prudent course of action. That delay would allow time to receive formal CMS approval, to review the modified CMS terms and condition, and to make sure of our policy direction. At the same time, however, we acknowledge that this will also delay implementation of either enhancing the CHIP or the FIOP by 2.5 months. Your Human Services Subcommittee recommends deferring the action on the request to allocate $1.1 million remaining in the special purpose appropriation for fee out maintenance of effort requirements to Department of Human Services for use in the CHIP.
Discussion?
Speaker, I voted no on this yesterday, and I just want to explain why. And I agree with the good Senator Winters that everybody on the I think everybody sitting up there wants to get that money as out as quickly as possible. We're going to defer it until June, until the June meeting, and I want to get money to the needy children as soon as possible. I know everybody else does as well, but I want to emphasize: if we wait until June, a lot of those needy kids will be scattered to the winds. Well, right today, if we can pass that, if we were to pass that today and move that money, they're still in school, they'd be easy to locate, and I think we could move things along. I appreciate, however, the other point that Senator Winters made regarding they want to be absolutely sure what it, that all final approval is done, have a chance to look at all the rules and regulations. But I believe we're going to move it in June, and because of that, I just as soon see it moved today and not wait. Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Portland.
Thank you very much, Madam Co-Chair. I want to say first that the staff and Senator Winters did an excellent job of capturing the discussion held in the committee on yesterday. I agree with my colleague, Representative Barker. I think we have an opportunity to get services out there to those who are vulnerable and who need them now. And in my mind, always in my mind, I will remember Douglas Schmidt, the gentleman, the citizen who lingered in a coma and then died. And as a result of public policy decisions made in this building, that weighs heavily on my mind and on my heart. And so again, I think we have an opportunity to move now, and we're not going to take that opportunity most likely, but that's my strong feeling about it. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Boone.
And I would mirror both Rep. Barker's and Senator Gordley's comments, but I'm going to vote for it because I also understand what happened in committee and appreciate that. Just a suggestion, I don't know if it's even possible, but maybe what we could do is identify some of those kids now before they take off out of school, if that's the case, and use the time wisely to do that. It's another couple of months, but I don't know. Maybe that's a way to identify some of the eligible kids.
Thank you, Representative. Senator Westman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I too, am very concerned and troubled by the delay in the release of these desperately and vitally needed funds. Last session, after a considerable debate, the 05 legislature specifically reserved to this committee $4 million to benefit children. And they directed DHS to apply to CMS for a MOE waiver for our FEOP expenditure. So I don't know how we can, you know, characterize this approval from CMS as unexpected. The issue before us is 9,000 children, you know, getting coverage between, you know, 2.5 months sooner than they otherwise would. I want to echo Senator Gordley's heartfelt words regarding Mr. Schmidt. Medical need and medical services, when they are needed, are just that, desperately needed. We have the opportunity to provide health care to 9,000 children 2.5 months sooner than we are currently contemplating. Because of that, Madam Chair, I will be a no. And I appreciate the committee's discussion of this issue.
We're going to stand at ease for a moment. Just so everyone can have the benefit of, there was new information that came rather late to the subcommittee, and I mean rather late. Very late yesterday. So, Mr. Britton, could you kind of explain this whole issue for the full committee and explain what happened yesterday on this?
I'll try to do my best, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
As you all know, this has been an ongoing discussion with the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services by the Department of Human Services in large measure, as well as the governor's office. And I think that a lot of us felt that a CMS approval, because it had been delayed so long, DHS sent the application into CMS, I believe, in October of last year. We hadn't heard in by the October e-board, we hadn't heard in January, and things were not looking real bright. However, Dr. Goldberg and I believe the governor had conversations with Secretary Leavitt of the Department of Health and Human Services last Thursday, a week ago yesterday, and that seemed to break the logjam and get things going back at CMS. Approval by way of a letter saying that formal approval came yesterday about 5 or 6 in the morning. That letter saying that CMS was going to grant formal approval for to allow Oregon to use these funds that would be spent in CHIP and count them as part of the FEOP maintenance of effort, it will presumably be forthcoming. But as Senator Winters read in her pony, we haven't gotten formal approval yet. We did get a promise of that approval both through email and through a letter that we received yesterday. The delay would certainly mean that the roll-up for the current biennium would probably might reach 9,000. It might not. No one was sure of that yesterday. And that question was asked of the department. So it would delay the implementation of spending this money in CHIP by about 2.5 months. How fast that could be rolled out through the remaining part of the biennium, no one knows. I think that the consideration of the fact that children would be out of school by the time of the June Emergency Board meeting is a consideration, but we haven't had formal CMS approval just yet. Promises that we will get it, but we haven't actually received formal approval.
Could you explore the FEOP portion of this, how many families are waiting on that?
My recollection from yesterday, and members of the subcommittee, please correct me, my recollection is that if the money were to be used in the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program, that it would serve about 1,400 persons, was my recollection.
Madam Chair?
Senator Gardner?
What I wrote in my notes was 1,500 to 2,000. And they further clarified that within that number, we're talking about individuals, families, and some children.
A mixture, no?
A mixture, right.
And is it the recommendation of LFO that we wait until June?
The recommendation in my analysis was either to allocate the money to FEOP, go ahead and do that, or to defer action. The subcommittee chose that second alternative, and that was what was recommended to the full e-board this morning, defer action on this.
Representative Hanna, and then Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We did have a considerable amount of discussion about this. And prior to the vote, you know, one of the things that I said was it would be my inclination to get the money to the CHIP program if we had proper approval. And I just felt like, you know, given that this information came in at 5 or 6 in the morning, it literally was set in front of us at the moment of the subcommittee meeting, we could have made a snap decision and may have missed on some rule down the road. I don't know. But I guess as I sit here and listen, the next thought is, and I know that this isn't maybe normal or maybe we can't do it, but what if we modified this to say if the approval is received, if the formal approval is received from CMS between now and the June meeting, that we turn the funds loose to the CHIP program. And it's just a thought from the top of the head.
Okay. Representative Richardson?
I want to comment on a couple of things. One is the consideration as to whether we should allow the $1.1 million to go forward to the Family Health Insurance Assistance Program. We have to take into consideration whether or not we're going to be able to fund that program to the same level in the next biennium. And we have a unique funding situation where the funding for FEOP went up substantially this biennium because of a maintenance of effort requirement, and it is questionable whether or not we'll be able to maintain that funding in the future. I think that's one of the reasons that we had asked for this $4 million to be held back. Now, we have $1.1 million. We've been waiting for months for this approval. The approval comes on the day of the vote. We've asked about terms and conditions, and we're told that there's 27 pages of terms and conditions that haven't been analyzed yet. And so it's certainly a balance. You know, you'd like to go forward, but does the ends justify avoiding normal means where you consider all aspects of a grant and the consequences before you just say we're going to go ahead and release $1.1 million? And so after this discussion, it was thoroughly discussed, and we all, you know, could balance it, and we just kind of came down with kind of a split vote on to whether you just go ahead because the end is important, or do you hold back and make sure that things are in order before you go forward. And so that was the decision of the subcommittee.
Has it ever been your experience that things have gone awry after an initial nod? I mean, has it ever gone south on us?
Madam Chair, I hesitate to answer that question because in my limited experience, that has not happened. You know, they have promised approval, and I have no reason not to take them at their word. Ms. Reed, from representing the Office of Medical Assistance Programs from DHS yesterday, said to the subcommittee that they had reviewed the terms and conditions and had not found an onerous reporting requirement in them. My concern that I reflected in my analysis was, I think we all need to be very clear about what those terms and conditions are as they relate to the maintenance of effort requirement. Again, assurances from her were that there were no onerous reporting requirements. I have not seen those draft terms and conditions.
I think the concern was a couple of them. That one, we just received the document just as we were going in to in the committee without having any time to really vet or even frame your questions of what to ask, and you're asking to pass on to some unknown. That was, I think, probably more than anything was concerning to the subcommittee. Clearly, I think the members of the subcommittee all support and want to be able to support children and the CHIP. But I think that I know from the perspective was that we just received the document. Not only that, with the 27 pages of conditions, not knowing what those maintenance of effort conditions would be, caused some pause for concern. And so that was why the recommendation was to defer, to give time for members to be able to vet that particular issue.
Senator Schrader, then Senator Portman.
The world won't end whichever way we decide this, so I think it's important for all of us to keep perspective here. But my listening to the conversation and stuff, and given the glacial speed at which the federal government works, I'm not so sure we have the opportunity to allocate these funds like we're hoping, you know, and reach the necessary number of kids. The other thing that comes to my mind, it seems like there's a pretty much a good consensus both in the executive branch and the legislative branch bicameral, they're going to do something for kids for next session, hopefully in a much more organized and thoughtful way, put a package together ideally that helps all the children in our state to get health insurance. So I'm a little leery, quite a bit leery, actually, of going down the road and trying to do this separate chip thing, a small amount at this time that may not even get rolled out. And then the roll-up cost of this particular program, I think, is going to be significant compared to working with a program we have at least some track record with, which is the FEOP, and have made some promises to. So I lean, I think, towards going ahead and approving their initial request rather than deferring, and then working together, like I think we've been talking about, a more comprehensive children's program. To me, that makes more sense, that we can, where we're going to know the roll-up costs, we'll be in legislative session, everyone will understand there's, you know, $100 million or whatever roll-up costs at the end of the day for a more comprehensive program. So I'm just real worried that we're not going to be able to get the money out the door in time to do anything meaningful for CHIP. We'll be then locked into a big roll-up cost of a program that we're going to dismantle next session in favor of a better, more comprehensive program for kids. That's right.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'm wondering if Director Goldberg has any thoughts to contribute to our deliberation.
Director Goldberg, would you like to come forward? Share your thoughts.
He's racing up. He's going to lose another couple times, right?
Yeah, yeah. I have a choice.
A little.
For the record, Bruce Goldberg, Director of the Department of Human Services. Let me comment on some of the facts on the ground in terms of the approval piece. I sat in the room with the Governor and Secretary Leavitt about 10 days ago when, you know, we have three waiver requests in front of CMS, and it's been concerning to us about the glacial speed upon which these things get decided, and you know, we were pretty clear with the Secretary that this was a concern, and we needed to get these things decided one way or another. The Secretary looked the Governor in the eye and said, I will get on this, and that was at about 8:30 in the morning. When the flu summit was over at about 10:30, 11, his team had talked back to folks in Washington, D.C., and had indicated that they would be approving the maintenance of effort request around the FEOP program. And the Secretary looked the Governor in the eye and said, you'll get your approval. Over the ensuing days, there were a number of communications which didn't quite reflect that same sentiment from staff level, which concerned us, and we got back in touch with the Secretary's office to determine what the case was, that we had gotten a sense that this was going to be approved, and now there was a lot of tremendous bureaucracy that this would be. They were approving the fact that we could apply for an approval, which was really quite astounding to me. I won't comment anymore. We got back in touch with CMS and said, look, What's the issue? I thought we were having. The Secretary had said we were getting an approval, and we got word back. This was a day ago that yes, indeed, we are getting approval, and that there'll be no games. And you know, I got an email from James Whitfield yesterday morning after he had been in contact with Secretary Leavitt, which said clearly, because Mr. Whitfield was the other person in the room with the Secretary, saying approval is forthcoming. And we have the terms, we got the terms and conditions on Thursday. I'm sorry, on Wednesday. Wednesday afternoon, we got the terms and conditions. Our staff had been able to review those terms and conditions on Wednesday. They feel that there aren't any difficulties with those terms and conditions. And the note from the Secretary's office was, approval is forthcoming. You have the terms and conditions. And I feel pretty comfortable based on that degree of assurance that we will get approved. I think there's a larger policy issue for the committee to deal with about the use of these funds. You know, my personal opinion is that, you know, one of the issues about covering children has been not so much expanding coverage of children, but we have a number of children who are eligible for coverage who continue to fall off of coverage for a variety of reasons. And from a policy perspective, and I think there have been a lot of discussions about this with a variety of committees, it makes sense to do what we can to cover the kids right now who are eligible before we go on and expand coverage to all kids. And that was what this policy would do by extending eligibility from 6 months to 12 months would really give us an opportunity as a state to, with some stability, cover the current children who we've extended coverage to before we move on next session or otherwise and expand eligibility.
Mr. Rocco?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, one option I think you might have is it appears that you're going to have a special session in the next couple of weeks. If there's sufficient time to review the terms and conditions by then and to get formal approval from the federal government, that this is something that you could do at that time through an act of the legislature. It could be worked into whatever other rebalance bill that we're using to with the Department of Human Services.
Mr. Senate President Courtney, what are your thoughts on that?
That was no help.
You know what our lives have been like lately? This is really delightful. Speak and I go over these agendas ahead of time, and there was no red lights or sirens went off when we dealt with this issue, if I'm not mistaken, Madam Speaker.
That's correct, Mr. President.
And we hear from the good Dr. Kohlberg, we're talking kids now, and all of us care about that. I think, Ken, what are you doing? The only thing that worries me about that, the delay, gentlemen, is let's face it, we're going to have a special session. The human resource budget is one of the reasons, in fact it is the primary reason, at least that's how it started months ago, and I don't know whether, and we're in negotiations now with that, so that I'm a little comfortable with that recommendation, to tell you the truth. We got to talk outside.
Stand at ease. We'll be right back.
For indulging us for this unexpected interruption, I'd like to now recognize the good Senator Jackie Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I'm going to defer to you and later to, I think it's going to come back later on the agenda. We've had considerable discussion outside, and so can we just hold this over until later in the session?
By that you mean?
Well, unless you're ready to make your comments now.
We might be able to dispose of it right now, provided we get some things in the record.
Madam Co-Chair, your Human Services Subcommittee that had recommended that the Emergency Board defer action on the request to allocate the remaining $1.1 million special purpose appropriation to the Department of Human Services with the intention that action will be taken at the upcoming special session instead of today.
All right. Senator Carter, excuse me, Senator Carter.
Thank you, Mr. President, Mr. Co-Chair, excuse me. I'm prepared to support this motion today with the following sentiments, that this legislature has gone on and on and on in talking about a deliverable system for kids in this state, and we have not been successful at it. And this is the first step toward doing it, and for those of us who worked with a lot of the stakeholders, the last time felt that this amount these dollars that are now allocated to go to FEOP for to transfer from FEOP to CHIP is very, very important. I'm only prepared to support this motion today, Mr. Chairman, with the idea in mind that this issue will be taken up again during the special session, and that we will leave this allocation in place so that we can take care of our kids in the state.
Senator Schrader.
How are you doing, Mr. President?
Look, I assume you have something more to say than that.
Absolutely.
Please do.
Well, it's my understanding, then, with this revised motion, that this particular allocation will either occur or not occur at the June special set, or excuse me, the April special session, probably here. And either it occurs or doesn't occur based on whether or not we've got the terms and conditions all worked out. If those are not all worked out, then at the June board or at the April special session, that the money will go ahead and be allocated to FEOP. Give the department a chance to work closely with CMS and make sure that the appropriate details are worked out. We can actually use the money because we do want to use the money. Also, some discussions with the Department of Human Services that this particular allocation will be the foundation, at least from the department standpoint and governor's office, that be a foundation for any program, any children's health program in the future. So, therefore, would not be separate and distinct, but part of whatever we might probably be doing next session. So I'd be prepared to go ahead.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Gordley, do you wish to make a statement? You don't I'm trying to embarrass anybody. I'm trying to get a record.
I do not. I'm ready to move forward.
Senator Frank Morris, do you have a statement?
No, I'm fine with the action.
Okay. I and the Speaker have spoken about this issue along with Senator Dr. Goldberg as well as Ken Rocker, and I'm prepared to support this motion. From my understanding, the special session we will be coming in. We will be coming in on Thursday, April 20th. I don't know the exact time. It's been set of the date, and that this will be part of the package on human resources. However, we resolve that in terms of it will be reported and it will appear at least in terms of language in the legislation. That is our goal. So it is not just simply a discussion taking place here. We have had these discussions. I know they've been out in the hall press. You don't like that, but it was out in the hall. Anybody could have heard us. Dr. Goldberg and Mr. Ken Rocco, as well as the Speaker and myself, we called the Senate members out there, and we did everything in public. So with that, Madam Speaker, yes, thank you for indulging me. Thank you, my fellow legislators, for the interruption, because I'm the one that caused it. I thank you, and I do support the motion that is now before us by the good Senator Jackie Winters.
Further discussion?
Madam Chair, for procedural reasons, first we have to have a motion to amend the subcommittee and vote on that. And then once you do that, then we would have the actual motion and pass that motion.
Madam Chair, I move that we amend my previous motion.
Any objection? Hearing none?
Madam Chair, the Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board defer action on a request to allocate the remaining $1.1 million special purposes appropriation to the Department of Human Services with the intent that the action will be taken at the upcoming special session.
Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Item number 16, Health and Aid Licensing Board. Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board acknowledge the receipt of a progress report on the efforts of seven health-related licensing boards to develop a plan for consolidated administrative structure. In response to concerns about the administrative challenges faced by agencies with three or fewer FTE, the executive directors of seven health-related licensing boards agreed to develop a plan for consolidated administrative structure. Their agreement was summarized in a budget note along with the requirement to provide a progress report to the emergency board. The progress report submitted by the seven boards describes the four options they considered and identifies, quote, formalizing and enhancing existing informal agreements, close quote, as their recommended options. The subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report with no recommendation on the preferred option.
Discussion. Objection? Item number 17, Commission for the Blind, Senator Gordley.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $1,506,192 and increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $407,648 to repair and improve the Commission's main facility and make technology upgrades, and this is regarding the Commission for the Blind. The Commission's main facility, located in Southeast Portland, provides office space for staff and houses the Rehabilitation Programs Training Center. The building is owned by the Department of Administrative Services. There have been no major repairs to the building since 1983. Proposed repairs include HVAC system replacement, siding repair and painting, replacement of old restroom fixtures, and roof renovation. Proposed improvements include expansion of the training kitchen to allow more students to train at once and reconfiguration of the shop area to improve the functionality of the space. The request also includes replacement of old furniture and technology investments, including replacement of failing network servers, blind-specific training software, and braille machines and printers. Funding for the request is provided by a one-time increase in federal vocational rehabilitation basic support funds and an unexpected increase in donations. The Human Services Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Senator Schrader.
Yeah, I'm actually going to have a little trouble with this particular proposal. I've had some contact with people on the Blind Commission and trying to get these monies to where they actually, the goal I think should be to make sure that the monies we draw down from the federal government are matched to best advantage. And while I think fixing the building and some of the accoutrements would be a good idea, I think a better idea is to make sure we get blind people jobs. And I don't see this particular proposal facilitating that. I've gotten a request from vocational rehabilitation organization in my neck of the woods that has been desperate in trying to pull down some of the limited dollars from the federal government at this point in time, trying to do a comprehensive job placement program for adults and graduating high school students in the Portland metropolitan area. And they've raised a lot of money privately, no state dollars, trying to put together this program that hopefully can go forward in the future. And to me, that would be better use of these limited dollars from the federal government at this point in time. So I'm in favor of getting people jobs. I think that's what people with disabilities need. I appreciate the need for the building, but to me, this in our limited budget environment, be better use of the dollars.
Further discussion? Senator Morris?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Schrader raises some interesting points. And since I was not a part of this, and it may be relevant to other members as well, a little more explanation from those on the committee that dealt with this with respect to the dollars that go specifically to things that directly impact the recipients or the intended recipients of these dollars. As I read the synopsis of this issue, looks like we're reconfiguring and remodeling the shop area, which directly impacts the students. An expansion and upgrade of the training kitchen, adjustable lighting that accommodates the client's needs. Senator Schrader, you raised some interesting points, but I'm wondering if someone could shed maybe a little more light on the specifics of some of these dollars that actually do go directly to the client.
Mr. Rocco?
Well, just as we wait, I guess my comment would be the blind people don't really care about the lighting too much. And that I think the wood shop being decreased in size is not a good thing because that directly empowers their ability to actually get jobs. So I'm very concerned to go on accidentally the wrong way. This to me is not about the sighted people there. It's about the people that can't see. And that's where I want to make sure the money is going. I just don't see this helping anyone there get a new job. I asked about the kitchen facilities. you know, what they're doing there. I thought this was, I think they're selling people short. When I asked about the kitchen facilities, they're all excited about expanding them, and their idea wasn't to train them about how to get a job. Their training was, you know, frankly underselling that, just to let people walk around the kitchen. I think if that's the attitude we're going to have towards people in our disabled community, their opportunity to excel and get jobs and be respected members of our society is going to be sorely limited. I think it's time to step forward and be bolder.
Could you just go ahead and address something? I've never done this, but I identify myself. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Morris, part of the reason the request came forward in this way is because the commission has access to one-time money. And so, as you all know, particularly for agencies that are serving people, particularly those with disabilities, social services, facilities are the last thing that they invest in. And since this was one-time money, they thought this was an advantage then to go in and make improvements to the facility that they do believe will benefit their clients. Part of the issue, for example, with the heating and air conditioning is that some days it's too hot or too cold to train people in the training facilities, so they have to move them to conference rooms. So these are the kinds of things that they hoped would benefit their overall training. The kitchen area helps people remain independent longer in their homes, and therefore they don't go into the long-term care roles. And so, again, the agency felt that they were benefiting their clients. They were also concerned about adding to their caseload with one-time money. This way they can make improvements that will benefit clients down the road without adding more people to their caseload, not knowing that this money would continue in the long run. So I'd be happy to talk about the specifics of these individual items if you wanted me to.
Right, that's very helpful. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Winters?
No, she has answered my question. Thank you.
Representative Hanna?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. We did hear from representatives from the commission about some of the renovations on the building itself. Some of the testimony included some dry rot to be repaired, roof problems, and many others, not to mention which $120,000, I think, is for blind-specific computer technology upgrades, about $80,000 in server upgrades so that they can have their server base be from the Portland office and not spread around the state. I think they made a pretty good case for some of the other improvements. And I guess I would also say that specific to the disability of the persons the facility is named after, there's many others providing services and delivery to that facility that do need all the other amenities such as lighting and restroom fixtures and those type of things. So I felt like they came, made a good case. They're using some of their fund, their own funds for the renovation, and it was the thought of the committee to move forward with this.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
Thank you. One of the speakers yesterday was the chair of the commission who is blind, and he spoke with a sense of urgency about the deteriorating conditions. His description included leaking roof and, again, very undesirable working conditions. The other thing that the chair of the commission said that was very interesting was that no legislators have been by their offices in many years. Mm-hmm. And so I did pledge to go by and visit next mm-hmm. week. I'll do that. But again, just wanted to say that for the record on behalf of the chair of the commission.
Thank you. Further discussion? Any objection? Senator Schrader. Item number 18, Department of Justice, Senator Schrader.
Thank you very much, Madam Speaker. The Education Subcommittee recommends Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on the current status and potential legal costs of protecting revenue stream generated by the terms of the Master Settlement Agreement with tobacco companies. 1998, Oregon and 45 other states signed the master settlement agreement with major tobacco companies, producing annual revenue stream for Oregon for over 30 years. Oregon is expected to receive over $200 million in 2005-2007 biennium, as designated that these funds be used for debt service, good old appropriation bonds, and OHSU-related bonds, and funding for the Department of Human Services. The agreement allows for a number of annual adjustments, one of which deals with the impact on the market shares of the tobacco companies participating in the agreement. Therefore, an adjustment is authorized if it is found that a state's efforts in enforcing specific components of the agreement have not been diligent. Tobacco companies have until mid-April to decide on whether to withhold a portion of the next payment for this adjustment. Financial risk to the state is in three parts. First, the withholding of a portion of the payment could create cash flow issues in the present budget. Second, if the state is found to not be diligent in its enforcement agreement, the state could lose up to $70 million. The Department of Justice believes that it has been diligent in these efforts. And finally, the department will naturally incur estimated legal costs. These costs up to about $2.3 million in defending its enforcement efforts. There are still many uncertainties relating to the potential amount of lost revenue received under the agreement, extent of legal costs, source of funding for legal costs. For this reason, the subcommittee recommends acknowledging receipt of the report and further require the Department of Justice to return to the June Emergency Board with an update. Just as a note, this is one of three or four items in our packet for today that will cost us money next biennium that has been totally unanticipated and will add to the roll-up costs of the programs we currently have in place.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 19, Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $92,237 from the Emergency Fund to address a funding gap in the budget of the Board of Parole and Post-Prison Supervision due to Attorney General costs and the evaluations of predatory sex offenders. The Attorney General's budget for the Patrol Board represents approximately 20% of the entire agency's budget, a share much larger than most any other state agency. These costs are generally beyond the control of the board and are primarily derived from appeals of the board's decision regarding individuals who are inmates or on parole or post-prison supervision. There are significant spikes in billing for the last few months of the 03-05 biennia due to a few expensive cases and increased time spent by the Department of Justice attorneys on the board's cases during May and June. The 05 legislature addressed part of the problem, but the amount required was greater than expected. In addition, reductions made to the services and supply portions of the board's 05-07 budget have had a much larger impact and was expected, increasing the size of the gap. Overall, a net $73,877 is required for these costs after factoring savings in other areas of the board's budget. The second issue is related to the designation of predatory sex offenders. A 2005 court decision required an evaluation based on current information prior to an offender being released and designated as a predatory sex offender. The board and the Department of Correction estimates that 54 evaluations will be required during the remainder of the biennium at a total cost of $18,360. The 05-07 budget report for the parole board stated the agency could return to the emergency board if further resources were required for both the Attorney General costs and the predatory sex offender issue. Your subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion? Objections? Item number 20, Department of State Police, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, the General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $900,910 from a reservation in the emergency fund and approve the establishment of 10 permanent trooper positions to increase the number of troopers in the patrol division. The Department of Administrative Services is requested to unschedule the funds pending budget and management division and legislative fiscal office review of the financial status of the agency. In response to the concern over the number of troopers patrolling state highways,
The emergency board in January crafted a two-part proposal to increase the amount of resources dedicated to providing patrol coverage. First, the evidence technician program was reestablished by creating 10 new non-sworn positions, which will free up time currently spent by sworn staff in processing and tracking evidence. Second, the emergency board established a reservation of $900,000 in the emergency fund for up to 10 additional trooper positions, which the subcommittee recommends be allocated at this time. The agency estimates it will have a sufficient number of candidates to begin a training school of at least 30 recruits in May to fill any current vacant positions as well as the new 10 positions. To assess this reservation, the January emergency board required the state police to meet several conditions, including completing the hiring process for the 10 evidence program positions, having sufficient vacant positions and eligible recruits for a May school, using the funds for which they were allocated for, and reporting on the agency's financial status and number of vacant positions. The agency appears to have met all conditions except completing the financial status report. The subcommittee discussed the current status of vacant and double-filled positions for both sworn and non-sworn staff. There was also discussion relating to the balance between troopers and management staff and the difficulty of recruiting for the sergeant positions due to salary compression. Your subcommittee recommends allocating the $900,910 in the reservation for requesting it be unscheduled until BAM and LFO staff are able to review a completed financial status report.
Madam Chair, I heartily approve of this direction. I think it's a good step in the right direction, but it's still woefully inadequate. Recently, I got a communication from a state trooper who related a personal story to me of being involved in a high-speed car chase, which in a rural area of the state, which ended up with him exiting the vehicle, chasing an individual up a hill, calling for backup. It took a half hour before a deputy sheriff could get there to back him up, and he could have been dead by then. This is something we have got to address. There are not enough resources in law enforcement to back up state troopers. There are not 24-hour patrols. When you're driving down the freeway and you call to report on 911 a drunk driver or someone driving erratically that's a true danger to society, sometimes there's no state trooper anywhere to get to them. And we have got to address this somehow in the coming time. So I appreciate the direction you're headed here, and I think it's appropriate to start with this.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. And I'd like to, I of course, second what Representative Crump said. And I just want to add, too, that the state police need to get a little more forward-thinking, especially on their training. They don't need to wait and hire 30 at a time. They need to be processing them through the state, Department of Police Standards and Training, Public Safety Standards and Training. And they can run through that academy. If they want to train them in state police specific things, they can do that later. Portland, City of Portland, which hires a lot of people, does that. They can use the Monmouth facility now and then do the little additional training back home. We need to get those people in the pipeline all the time, not occasionally get 30. And as has been pointed out in the past and before I was down here, they need to, when we allocate trooper funds, they need to hire troopers and get them out, not keep building up the chief's division about them. Thank you.
Madam Chair. Senator Gordley.
Thank you. Speaking as your former chair of the Ways and Means Public Safety Committee, where we spent a great deal of time on the Oregon State Police budget, and Representative Hannah served on that committee as well. It's fine for us to keep talking about what we need to do for the state police in terms of increasing the numbers and providing the resources, et cetera. But until and unless there is a plan, and I have an idea of how we can fund, increasing the gas tax is one way to raise revenue for the state police. A sales tax dedicated to a part of it dedicated to funding the state police is another way. Until we actually have a plan that says this is how we're going to fund and support and bring stability to our state police, until we're ready to do that, let's stop talking about it. Let's put some action behind our words.
Further discussion. Any objection? Porter, we have, looks like, quite a group here. If you'd like to step forward and just kind of tell us who you are? Okay.
I don't want to disrupt your you've got important public business to do. Many of you know who I am. I'm Professor Russ Dunbarrow from Pacific University. We have two groups, a group of OT students from our occupational therapy program, headed by John White and my colleague, Tiffany Bofix. Tiffany, raise your hand. And I'm here showing them the political science process as it affects OT and healthcare. We also have a group from Forest Grove, Beaverton, Hillsborough, and the area from Adelante Mujeres, and Bridget Cook is our leader. And our guests are working with our students, learning about the healthcare issues and educational issues of people of Latina descent. And of course, as we're all aware, that Oregon is much more diverse than when I grew up in it, thankfully, as your body indicates today. And we're going to have more of that as we go along. Anyway, we're here to watch the legislature. We're going to be in hearing room 50 from the rest of the day. So if any of you want to come and talk with our students, you're more than welcome to do so. In fact, I would hope you could in between your other business sessions. Thank you.
Thank you and welcome. We're glad to have you here this morning. Item number 21, Department of State Police, Senator Furr.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board acknowledge receipt of a report on an evaluation of the level and type of staffing required to enforce laws relating to gaming activities of tribal governments. Under intergovernmental compacts between the state and tribal governments, the state police are responsible for the oversight of gaming operations to ensure the integrity, security, and compliance of existing laws and agreements. The budget report for the state police included a budget note instructing the agencies to study what the proper staffing level and the type of staff required to provide this oversight. The state police and the governor's office have determined that the current level of staffing should be maintained, but also found that it would be more efficient to rely on non-sworn personnel for the on-site monitoring of gaming operations. As a result, 5 sworn detective positions will be replaced by non-sworn auditor positions through attrition. The subcommittee recommends acknowledging the receipt of the report, but expressed concern regarding the length of a transition based on attrition. The subcommittee requested the agency to report on the progress and results of the plan as part of its budget presentation to the 2007 legislature. The committee urges your approval of this report.
Discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, just one brief concern I have about the system. The Oregon State Police monitor the Indian gaming. And then they retire and become workers for the Indian tribes on those gaming. And I would like to see some kind of a separation between retirement and when you go to work, because I just am uneasy with that kind of a deal where I'm monitoring you and then you're going to hire me the next week. Thank you.
Good point.
Revolving door.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 22, attorneys and their deputies. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board deny a request for $240,000 allocation from the Emergency Fund for district attorney costs relating to juvenile dependency hearings in Columbia and Yamhill counties. The two district attorneys requesting $120,000 each to pay for staff for 1 year to provide representation in juvenile dependency hearings in their counties. They say these resources are required since they no longer have the funds available to provide representation in shelter and jurisdictional hearings. No other county made a similar request at this time. The October Emergency Board provided $2.5 million in funding to the Department of Human Services for juvenile dependency cases, but this funding was primarily for post-jurisdictional hearings and related work. It was assumed the DA's role would continue as it has in the past for shelter and jurisdictional hearings. The scope of functions performed by DA staff varies significantly from county to county and depends on funding and case selection priorities set by DAs, county boards, and others. At this time, only Yamhill and Columbia counties are requesting these funds, meaning all other counties are assuming they will continue to perform functions relating to shelter and jurisdictional hearings. A major concern identified by the subcommittee was the signal that approval of this request would send to other counties. providing this level of support to all 36 DA offices in the state could cost more than $3 million for the remainder of this biennium. Subcommittee members felt this request dealt with policy and funding issues best addressed during the 2007 legislative session. The Attorney General currently has a work group studying this issue and should have recommendations for the 2007 session. The district attorneys have been active in this work group.
Further discussion? Any objections? Item number 23, Economic and Community Development Department, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $231,674, transfer $394,806 in lottery funds expenditure limitation from lottery bonds debt service to operations, and approve the establishment of five permanent positions, equivalent to 3.58 full-time equivalents. To complete the agency restructuring plan approved by the Economic and Community Development Commission. The 2005 legislature identified problems with the coordination and delivery of economic development services and directed OECDD to improve these services. Specific emphasis was given to improving the delivery of services to Oregon's small businesses and independent ports. OECDD has reviewed the operations and structure of the agency and revised its strategic plan and objectives. The revised plan and reorganization were presented to the Economic and Community Development Commission for final approval. OECDD tied its performance measures to the strategic plan and will report to the 2007 legislature on outcomes based on the strategic objectives. The reorganization includes this emergency board request to create five new positions to be funded from transferred lottery funds and from an increase in other funds limitation generated from interest earnings on revolving loan funds. These positions will assist the agency to streamline service delivery and ensure effective coordination of activities with focus on small business development and services to Oregon's 23 ports. With this action, the 2005 and 2007 staffing level will be 119.58 full-time equivalents, which is below the peak 1999-01 staffing level of 139.75 full-time equivalents. There will be additional costs in the 2007-2009 biennium for these positions. The legislature can determine if the reorganization, strategic focus, and new positions have generated sufficient increased economic development to justify retaining the positions. Madam Co-Chair, the Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Objection? Item number 25, Department of Agriculture. Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the amount of $700,000 for the acquisition of 6,065 acres in Wallowa County to provide habitat for the federally listed plant spalding sketchfly. The Department of Agriculture is applying for the grant on behalf of the Nature Conservancy. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service requires the state agency to be used to apply for these grants. The total purchase price of the property has been estimated at $3 million. Nature Conservancy will be seeking other sources of funding for the full purchase price, with the bulk of these funds coming from private donations. The grant program is competitive, with each grant proposal prioritized by the region. The Nature Conservancy has agreed to continue to voluntarily pay property taxes on the acquired property so that the acquisition does not reduce the county's tax base. It's been an issue for us here in the legislature. The department does not currently have sufficient expenditure limitation to accommodate this grant. If the grant is awarded, ODA will return to subsequent meeting of the E-Board to request an increase in the federal funds expenditure limitation. Your Education Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Further discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, I just want to share with you a clash of culture, and I hope my comments in no way disparage the Nature Conservancy, because they're not intended to. Colleagues, I want you to know that the three county commissioners in Wallowa County do not approve of this. And I want you to know that the cattlemen and the sheep growers in Wallowa County who are directly impacted by this do not approve of this. And I want you to know that approximately 70% of the citizens in Wallowa County do not support this. But with that said, we are a body of democracy, and in this building, compromises are made and compromises are reached. And I compliment the Nature Conservancy for standing up and being willing to make some concessions that will help make better neighbors between the Conservancy and the citizens of Wallowa County. As a citizen, I support this project. I think this is a good use of resources. As a representative, though, I'll be voting no. The citizens of Wallowa County feel as if, once again, Salem is going to dictate to them how they ought to operate and how they ought to maintain their land. And I say their land because it's a nominal amount. Over 70% of the land base, over 70% of the land base in Wallowa County is publicly owned. And as you can imagine, when 70% of your land base is publicly owned, the ability to generate revenue to maintain your basic services is very limited. And with the reduction in timber harvesting and with other restrictions placed on our natural resource economy, it's very difficult for these small rural communities to survive. I know my eloquence is not going to change any of your opinions, and I hope it wouldn't. But I do want you to know that the citizens in Wallowa County are concerned about this, and there really is a clash of culture between the Nature Conservancy and the citizens of Wallowa County. I'm hoping, though, that this will be a tool to help bridge that clash, and that we can use this as an opportunity to bridge urban and rural Oregon together. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Kreppman, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I hope that my eloquence does persuade you to vote against this. I strongly oppose this on philosophical grounds in two areas. The first is the acquisition of private property to be given to another private organization with public money, both from the lottery and taxpayer money from the federal government in the form of grants, I believe is wholly improper. I don't like that concept, first of all. I appreciate the Nature Conservancy's direction in this, however, in terms of being willing to go out and raise money privately. I think that's appropriate, and I very much appreciate the fact that they are willing to voluntarily pay property taxes on this property. I think that's very noble of them, and I agree with that. The other reason that I strongly object to this is that if we accept the logic that we should use public money to buy private land to protect endangered species, in this case the Spalding's catchfly, then that argument will lead us generations down the road to, assuming there's enough money available, private ownership of this state being turned over many times to the point where government, in essence, will control the bulk of our private ownership. I think the real problem here is the Endangered Species Act needs to be modified. And unless Congress finally chooses to go down that road to make it more balanced, there will always be a butterfly. There will always be a piece of grass or a species of grass that is listed as either threatened or endangered. And it will lead us to this point of this continuing to occur year after year after year, we getting requests in the legislature to approve the purchase of private property for this purpose. And I think that is ultimately a road to failure, and I strongly object to it.
Representative Boone?
I was just curious, Representative Smith, what the concessions that the Nature Conservancy gave. Was it the property tax?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Representative Boone, my understanding is that the Nature Conservancy has agreed to pay the property taxes related to the property, and that was a major concern. In addition, the Nature Conservancy has agreed to work with the county in terms of working on hunting hunting right access for locals, in addition working on some easement issues as it relates. In addition, the Nature Conservancy and the county have agreed to sit at the table and try and work through how to become better neighbors. What I would share with you is I think the Nature Conservancy plays a valuable role, and they play a vital role. The dilemma is there's a real clash of culture between that organization and rural Oregon, nothing of which can't be worked through with some communication and with some folks willing to put their personal agendas aside and work for the betterment of the industry and the environment. We know it can be done. Unfortunately, they just haven't got to the table and done that yet.
Further discussion? Representative Bannon?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair, and again, potentially to Representative Smith. The access issue to the public concerns me here, and I hear some talk of local access for hunting and that type of thing. Is that firmed up? I mean, is Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, does this area remain open to public access for hunting in a wildlife area as designated by Oregon Fish and Wildlife? And what about the economic impacts within the area? I've been to Wallowa County a number of times. I can't think of 6,000 acres that doesn't have trees on it someplace. And I'm wondering, does this completely put this area off limits to forest practices right. of any type?
We have not, Madam Co-Chair, Representative, we have not received those commitments in writing. I'm extremely concerned about that. Extremely concerned about that. But with that said, this is a democratic process, and projects are negotiated, and this is a project that needs to proceed forward.
Further discussion? Representative Richardson?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to let you know that I also will be voting against this. I feel it's inappropriate for public resources to be used to buy private land for a private organization. I just feel that that's not appropriate, and that sets a precedent that can be expanded in many areas, and it's just not a good precedent for us to do.
Thank you. Further discussion? Well, given the, I don't see any further discussion, given some of the folks want to vote no, I think we should do a roll call vote.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Morgan?
Yes.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Krupp?
No.
Representative Richardson?
No.
Representative Hanna?
Yes.
Representative Boone?
Yes.
Representative Barker?
Yes.
Co-Chair Minnis?
Aye.
Senator Schrader?
Aye.
Senator Carter?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Senator Gordley?
Aye.
Senator Winters?
Aye.
Senator Morse?
Aye.
Co-Chair Courtney?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Item number 26, Department of Ag, Senator Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the emergency board increase federal funds expenditure limitation by $92,807 for the Agricultural Development Program for additional funding being made available through the National Organic Certification Program. The Department of Agriculture has received additional monies from the federal government for the Organic Certification Program. These monies were provided to Oregon through a formula. The department's legislatively adopted budget does not provide enough federal funds expenditure limitation to accommodate these additional funds. The funding is being used to promote organic agricultural products. Your subcommittee, your general government subcommittee, recommends approval of the request.
Further discussion? Any objections? Item 27, Representative Morgan, Department of Forestry.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board allocate $2,018,788 from the Special Purpose Appropriation made to the Emergency Board to pay for the purchase of catastrophic fire insurance for the 2006 fire season and costs associated with contracting for large air tankers and helicopters to supplement fire suppression resources for the 05 fire season. The 05 legislature allocated allocated $3.56 million to a special purpose appropriation for the 05-07 fire season costs. Of that amount, $2.2 million was set aside for emergency fire suppression and $1.35 million for catastrophic fire insurance premiums. The agency is requesting $1,373,475 of the special purpose appropriation to pay for 2005 air tanker and severity costs and $465,313 of the special purpose appropriation to pay for 50% of the cost of purchasing catastrophic fire insurance for the 06 fire season. The emergency plans to use $505,553 of unspent Federal Emergency Management Agency reimbursement funds received for the 04 fire season to offset the $1.9 million expenditure for air tanker and severity resources used in the 05 fire season. As a result, the agency requires $1.4 million from the special purpose appropriation made to the emergency board to pay for the remaining balance. The insurance premium for 06 catastrophic fire insurance is $1,290,626 due April 1st, 2006. The premium is shared equally by the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund and the General Fund. The insurance provides $25 million of coverage beyond a $25 million deductible, the first $15 million of which is paid by the Oregon Forest Land Protection Fund. ODF will present a complete fire season severity plan to the Emergency Board for review and approval at the June 06 meeting. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 28, Parks and Recreation Department, Senator Sherman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation by $3,527,979, adjust existing position authority by an increase of 9.26 FTE for continued operation of the Oregon State Fair and Exposition Center during the last 18 months of the biennium, increase the lottery funds expenditure limitation by $8,573 for the administration program, increase the lottery fund expenditure limitation by $28,467 for the operations program, and reclassify five positions with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $855,260 of the fund expenditure limitation for the State Fair and Exposition Center program. The legislature provided 6 months position authority and expenditure limitation to the fair and provided 12 months for the transition period during the 05-07 biennium. Parks was instructed to realign positions and expenditure limitation following transfer of the fair. The department's analysis of revenues and expenditures projects a shortfall of other fund revenues for fair operations estimated at $3.5 million. The department projects annual fair revenues will decrease 4% per year and event revenues will increase 5% per year. The department requests an increase in lottery fund expenditure limitation to meet spending needs for the remainder of the biennium. In addition, the position authority needs to be increased to take it through the end of the biennium by adding months to the existing 12 months of position authority. Lastly, the department requires a technical adjustment to align positions with appropriate program units and classification. OPRD requests that a program technician 1 be reclassified to internal auditor 2, two program technician 1 positions be reclassed to safety specialist 2 positions, a program technician 2 be reclassified to a natural resources specialist 3, and a program technician 2 be reclassified to a principal executive manager D. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval with the understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will unschedule $855,260 of the fund expenditure limitation. General Government Committee recommends approval.
Discussion?
Just have a question. Madam Chair, and that is on the reclassification from program tech to a natural resource specialist. And I heard that part of the discussion was the loss of revenue, and I just wonder how that relates to revenue and the fair.
In conversation, Madam Chair,
the legislature understood the tremendous impact of the loss of dollars with the fair, but hoping that we would, when we recommitted ourselves to transitioning to the Parks Bureau, that these people would add other efficiencies in place and give the fair the opportunity in the next 3 to 5 years to show some improvement. And so this will allow them to show some improvement, and hopefully that we will start having receipts that are equivalent to the dollars that have been placed there.
Madam Chair. If I might also, Madam Co-Chair, in the very simplistic sense, what the action was that the subcommittee took was to the State Fair again lost revenue during the last fair. So the part of this action fills that hole in the operating budget of the agency. And then during the session, when the legislation was put in place that guided the transition and put the State Fair in the Parks Department, it wasn't known how long that transition was going to take place. So this kind of trues up some of that time frame and deals with some problems, some errors in the drafting of the budget report. It straightens that kind of thing out too. But Ms. Jordan, I think, can answer your particular question.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Senator Winters, the reclassification actually is a technical adjustment that has to do with the parks part of the department, not the State Fair. It had to do with some cleanup work that we needed to do on their budget.
Thanks.
Further discussion? Representative Barker.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I have concerns, and I expressed earlier, we're moving state park funds into the county fair, the state fair.
Right.
State fair is losing money, but we're going to pick it up with entertainment. So we're not a state fair anymore. We're an entertainment venue. And maybe we need to look into the future to possibly rotating the state fair to the various county fair sites and get it around the state. I mean, that thing's going down, but we need to have, I mean, I'm a strong supporter of the county fairs. I'd like to see a good, strong state fair. It's not working in Salem anymore. Maybe it's time to do something else, just to keep that in mind in the future. But I do not like seeing state park funds going into a place that's losing money that isn't a state park. Thank you.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item number 30, Department of State Land, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a personal observation, if I may. I know I speak for the whole committee. I don't think we've ever been graced by such an attentive and well-disciplined group of students. So thank you again for being here. Item number 30. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $122,300 and approve the establishment of two limited-duration full-time positions, 1.08 FTE, to address workload increases in the Estates Program. The Department of State Lands manages the state's unclaimed property in Estates Program. The Department of State Lands is handling estates valued at approximately $3.2 million. DSL has been in the process of educating landlords, funeral homes, medical examiners, attorneys, judges, and others involved with a decedent about DSL's role in these estate cases. The outreach, as well as the recent legislation, has resulted in an increase in the number of cases managed by the department from an average of 39 cases over the last 3 years to well over 120 cases in 2005. DSL is unable to absorb the increased workload. DSL currently has 1.50 FTE dedicated to handling the workload for the estates program. DSL proposes to add one limited duration full-time program analyst, one position at a cost of $53,956, and one limited duration full-time paralegal position at a cost of $55,570, as well as $12,774 in services and supplies to support the two positions for the remainder of the biennium. The addition of these positions will allow DSL to operate two trained teams to handle the increased workload. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of this proposal.
Further discussion? Any objections?
Item 31, Department of State Lands, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, the General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by approximately $197,000 to reimburse the Bureau of Land Management for fire suppression costs and to cover costs of land rehabilitation needed as a result of fire damage on Common School Fund rangeland. While fires are experienced every year on state lands, typically the costs are small and the division can accommodate them within its existing budget. However, the division's existing budget cannot absorb this amount of fire costs. The fires occurred in 2005 in Malheur County. The department has an intergovernmental agreement with BLM for fire suppression services on DSL lands intermingled or adjacent to BLM lands in eastern Oregon, requiring DSL to reimburse BLM for actual costs. Yet the General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Item 32, Department of State Lands, Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $102,333 for receipt of additional funds from a one-year U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service grant to assist in the revision of the Elliott State Forest Habitat Conservation Plan. On July 18, 2005, the Department of State Lands received legislative approval to apply for this grant. The department was notified in September 2005 that its application for funding was successful, although at a lower amount of $446,261. In October, the Emergency Board approved an increase in federal funds expenditure limitation of $446,261. In December 2005, the department was notified by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service that the full amount of $548,594 would be awarded, requiring an additional $102,333,000 in federal funds expenditure limitation. The department needs this additional federal funds in expenditure limitation to pass through the funding to the Department of Forestry, which will be working with the department and the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife in revising the Habitat Plan Conservation Plan. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. There was considerable discussion on this yesterday in the subcommittee, and one of the points that was made is that the Elliott State Forest, which is predominantly in Coos County between Roseburg and the coast, is the major funding stream into the Common School Trust Fund, which is a funder of the K-12 system. It's also a major economic driver in the region of the state that it exists in terms of the jobs that are created from harvests that take place on the land. And it is very important as the process goes forward in the development of this conservation plan that attention be paid to the need of that piece of land to generate revenue for the K-12 system in the state, and also the need of that land to generate jobs in the area. And there is, I know, a lot of dissatisfaction in the local area along around the direction that the current discussions are taking with relation to the Habitat Conservation Plan. So I would like to just have it reflected in the record that the property has a very large potential to contribute to the Common School Trust Fund and to the economic growth of the area. And I hope that as the land board pursues their deliberations on this, that those are primary considerations.
Further discussion?
Madam, I have a request.
Senator Carter,
could you please be in charge of your project?
Sure.
Thank you.
That works.
We all vote yes on that, Madam Chair.
Further discussion? Any objection? Yes. Item number 34, Department of State Lands, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I must say there was keen competition in the sub to carry this pony, and I appreciate the wisdom of the sub-chair as nominating me as the slug and bug pony carrier. Representative Smith was quite disappointed by that. But,
I was.
The General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $60,065 for grants supported for grants to support projects of the Natural Heritage Advisory Council. The council assists the State Land Board in implementing the mandates of the state's Natural Heritage Acts. Projections of federal revenues made during the 0507 budget development for invertebrate studies underestimated the amount of funds available to this biennium. The department has identified 8 projects involving Fender's Blue, Oregon Silver Spot, Taylor's Wailuga Checker Spot. Taylor's Wailuga Checker Spot, Insular Blue, and Seaside Ori Elf and Butterflies to be funded with the additional federal funds. The General Government Subcommittee recommends increasing the federal funds expenditure limitation by $60,065. Since I am usually corrected by our august LFO staff, am I saying Taylor's Wailuga?
Walsh.
Walsh? That's what I meant. Thank you very much.
Very, very close. Further discussion?
Just to add, Madam Co-Chair, that I'm beginning to doubt my choice of carriers.
Obviously, your confidence was misdirected, Madam Sub-Chair.
Senator Morris?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question. Does the e-board offer a pony reading school? and I put this in the context of I delivered agenda item 21, and I received this note from somebody, a colleague on this panel, that said, of the 196,720 pony reads since the inception of the e-board, that was the worst.
It didn't hold very long.
Who wrote that?
I don't know. Wasn't
the rider fell off of the horse.
Further discussion on Representative Boone.
I'd just like to point out that Senator Westland has just proven that he is a true Swede, because no Swede could ever pronounce a Welsh word like that.
Further discussion? Any objections? Item 35, Senator Westland.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve retroactively the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the amount of $412,000 for the acquisition of a conservation easement over approximately 1,084 acres on Coburg Ridge in Lane County to protect and enhance populations of Fender's Blue Butterfly. The Department of State Lands has requested retroactive approval to apply for a federal Cooperative Endangered Species Conservation Fund Recovery Land Acquisition Grant in conjunction with the Nature Conservancy. This federal grant program provides funding to reduce the threats to federally listed endangered species. Fender's Blue Butterfly was listed as a federal endangered species in 2000, and an area on Coburg Ridge was designated as critical habitat for the butterfly in 2005. The agency supplied advance notice to legislative leadership of its intent to apply for the grant. If awarded the grant, the agency will pass the federal funds received directly to the Nature Conservancy. The total of the conservation easement is expected to be approximately $5.4 million. The grant requires no state matching funds and will not result in any future state financial obligation for property management. The department will return to the Emergency Board for necessary expenditure limitation if the grant application is successful. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I have, in light of my previous comments in regarding the purchase of property, I have a lot less opposition to this concept in terms of conservation easements. Even though they do place restrictions, that is, in my view, a less onerous
issue in terms of actual land acquisition, in my mind. You know, the Nature Conservancy does good work. Of all the land conservation organizations out there, there's certainly one I've worked with most closely, but I have a lot of respect for how they approach the process and their ultimate goals. And, you know, they've worked very responsibly in terms of issues like invasive weed species that are a real problem in Oregon, especially eastern Oregon. And, you know, they manage their land well. And when it comes to conservation easements, I have every confidence that they'll do a good job there. So I'm not going to oppose this. And I wanted to make that statement because in my mind there is a difference between the purchase of private property and the purchase of a conservation easement or the signing of an easement. And I wanted to make that statement so that I didn't appear to be inconsistent on the public record.
Thank you. Representative, further discussion? Any objection? Item 37, Department of Fish and Wildlife, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $852,000 for work to restore Diamond Lake, with the understanding that ODFW will notify DAS if the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation makes additional purchases that reduce ODFW's need for expenditure limitation so that DAS can unschedule the amount of unneeded limitation. The water quality and recreational fisheries of Diamond Lake began to decline with the illegal introduction of the tui chub, which are a minnow-like fish, in 1992. These fish quickly reproduced and began a steep decline in water quality created by uncontrolled algae blooms caused by the tui chub's feeding patterns. The presence of tui chub also caused a drastic decline in rainbow trout populations and had been the basis for a very robust recreational fishery at the lake. ODFW worked with federal, state, and local entities to devise a method of restoring the lake. The method chosen was to draw the lake down, remove as many fish as possible from the lake, and apply rotenone to kill all the fish remaining in the lake. ODFW would then remove as many fish carcasses as possible, refill the lake, and restock it with rainbow trout. The final environmental impact statement for this restoration methodology was issued in December 2004. Work began in the fall of 2005 to lower the water levels in the lake. The department is seeking an increase in expenditure limitation needed to complete this biennium's restoration activities. The subcommittee reduced the original requested increase by $98,000 because the Oregon Wildlife Heritage Foundation used some of the donations they were going to turn over to ODFW to purchase boats needed for restoration work. Since this money will now be transferred to ODFW, their requested expenditure limitation increase was reduced to $852,000. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Further discussion? Any objection?
No, discussion.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you,
Madam Co-Chair. I just want to point out that in the analysis, the analysis says the lake will begin refilling in the winter of 2006. And since we have just passed the winter of 2006 and we're still draining the lake, that's an error.
That's
actually
correct.
The rotenone application will be in the fall of 2006 and we'll begin filling it back up in the spring or winter and spring of 2007 and restock late spring 2007. This just gets a little out of order. But I also want to say that Diamond Lake is a beautiful place in eastern Douglas County, one that provides tourism from all over southeastern and southwestern Oregon because of its proximity, and has traditionally been one of the most prolific trout fishing lakes in Oregon. And we're pleased to get it back in shape and have it ecologically sound as well.
Further discussion? Any objection?
Those chairs are great for you, though.
Item 38, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board approve the submission of a federal grant application to the National Marine Fisheries Service's Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund for $5,295,000. and increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $5,140,800, with the understanding that the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board will allocate other unused Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Funds monies to cover increased program costs for agencies receiving Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund monies due to the compensation plan changes, and increase the other funds expenditure limitation for Department of Fish and Wildlife by $1,019,200 for the purchase of one fish mass marking trailer. The Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund was initiated by Congress in 2000 with the intention of assisting Pacific states and Northwest tribal governments with efforts to recover native salmonids listed under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Oregon's share of the fiscal year 2006 Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund's funding is $6.4 million. Congress added two earmarks requiring the purchase of two fish mass marking trailers to be used in the Columbia River Basin with a total cost of $2.1 million. NOAA Fisheries will retain the money for one of the earmarks. The subcommittee added an increase in other funds expenditure limitation for ODF&W of $1,019,200 for the purchase of other fish mass marking trailer as required by congressional earmarks on Oregon's Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund grant. The remaining $4.1 million would be used to help fund OWEB's non-capital grant program, providing grant monies for monitoring, watershed assessments, education, outreach, and technical assistance to watershed councils, soil and water conservation districts, and private landowners. The 2006 Pacific Coastal Salmon Recovery Fund's funding level of $6.4 million represents a sizable reduction from recent grant amounts. There's every indication these reduced levels will continue in future federal budgets, which will prove challenging for the state as a number of Oregon plan programs have been funded using Pacific Coast Salmon Recovery Fund's federal funds. Your General Government Subcommittee recommends approval of the request.
Further discussion? Any objections? Ordered. Item number 40, the Marine Board. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, the General Government Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the federal funds expenditure limitation by $886,000 for the Marine Law Enforcement Program and by $198,000 for the Administration and Education Program area, resulting from an increase in the allocation of federal funds from the United States Coast Guard. The Oregon State Marine Board receives federal funds through the United States Coast Guard Sports Fish Restoration and Boating Trust Fund. The board was notified in December 2005 that an additional $1,084,000 has been allocated to Oregon for the balance of the 0507 biennium. The additional funds will be used to enhance existing contracts with county sheriffs for marine law enforcement safety services, for customer service improvements with online boat record lookups and interactive forms, and for boating safety education initiatives. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item 41, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board approve the establishment of 11 seasonal part-time positions, 5.5 FTE, for the Driver and Motor Vehicles Division. The Oregon Department of Transportation Driver and Motor Vehicles Division hires temporary employees to meet workload needs, primarily in field offices, during the summer months. In June 2004, the State Employees International Union filed a complaint with the Employment Relations Board challenging the legality of the Department of Motor Vehicles' practice of hiring temporary workers. The agency entered into a settlement agreement with SEIU that requires ODOT to seek authority for 11 seasonal positions, equivalent to 5.5 FTEs, for the Department of Motor Vehicles. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval of establishing the 11 seasonal positions. Madam Chair, I'm not sure that SEIU is the State Employees International Union. It's that
Service.
Yes, I think we have a misprint. Service Employees International Union. So with that correction, Madam Chair,
you got it.
Recommend approval.
Great. Further discussion?
Any objection?
Item
42, Department of Education, Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $8,253,428 for Destro Rail Spur, Short Line Railroad Rehabilitation, and Freight Rail System Improvements. Oregon Department of Transportation Rail Division oversees the Short Line Credit Premium Account established by the legislature in 2001. The Industrial Rail Spur Fund established by the legislature in 2003, the Amtrak Cascades Passenger Train Service in Eugene and Portland established in 1991. Capital expenditures for each of the programs were expected to be completed by the end of the 2003-05 biennium. For reasons beyond ODOT's control, several projects were not completed as planned, which result in expenditures during the current biennium. The Education Committee recommends increasing the other fund's expenditure limitation then by $8,253,428.
Discussion? Objection?
Just really quick, Madam Co-Chair, I potentially have a conflict of interest as I'm working with one of Oregon's ports on a rail project, and I don't know if I do, but I just wanted to clarify.
So noted. Any objections? Item 45, Oregon Liquor Control Commission, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $6,829,662 for the store operating expense program to increase agent compensation. Increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $1,944,330 for the administration program to pay bank card fees and approve the establishment of 6 limited duration full-time positions, 3.75 FTE, to operate warehouse equipment and handle shipments. The Oregon Liquor Control Commission reports that based on the sales volume for the first 8 months of the 05-07 biennium, sales could reach $722 million. An increase of $76.9 million in gross revenue. OLCC attributes the increase in sales volume to the ability of the agency to respond to customer demand. With the additional staff and overtime, the availability of more convenient purchasing methods via credit card and debit card, consumer preference for higher-priced products, and an aggressive marketing strategy of new products by distillers that appeal to new segments of the population. As a result, the agency is requesting an increase in its other funds expenditure limitation to maintain agency compensation at 8.88%, pay increased cost in bank transaction fees, and add 6 limited duration liquor distribution worker 1 positions to support receiving and shipping the greater number of cases and complexity of the product line for the remainder of the biennium. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I believe this draws focus to the need to revisit the business model and how we deal with an ongoing business enterprise that has dynamics that change almost, you know, daily, monthly, in terms of how they respond to the demand in the marketplace, and how we then tie them down so that they're not optimizing their business. And I would hope that in this next session that we can revisit the governance model for OLCC. It's more than just an agency that monitors and regulates. It's an agency that's in the business of selling liquor, as it may be, that needs to be more dynamic in how it can adapt to the changing marketplace. So I think this is just a very classic example of a model that just isn't working as well as it should, and maybe we can address that in the future.
Further discussion, Senator Carter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just talking with the co-chair, Schrader, about the business model that we use here, and it's also somewhat of a conflict because to allow the Liquor Control Commission to sell more alcohol means that we have to go on the other side and help the alcoholics. And so, therefore, we are compromising ourselves in terms of a policy that produces more alcoholics and then have problems in producing more prevention programs to help the alcoholics. And so somewhere along the line, the state has to look at its involvement in alcohol, period, if indeed we're going to say, Department of Human Services, you stay within your guidelines, but at the same time, we're producing more alcoholics on this end. So it is a conflict. And if we're going to stay in business, we need to allow them to be able to reach the marketplace level for which a business can aspire to. But so there is a big conflict here in terms of us as public policymakers and trying to help more alcoholics by giving them more opportunity to sell more alcohol.
So, Senator, do you want to privatize OLCC?
I would not.
Prohibition.
Amen.
Yeah. But it is. Whether we privatize it or not, and privatization is not a foreign issue to me. If you recall, in the 80s, we had this big issue, in terms of whether we do it. But the state has gotten itself into a situation where it depends upon the receipts of the liquor control, of alcohol in this state. We have conflicts all over the place philosophically. Senator Courtney, as you look very strangely at me, but that is something for us to think about, sir. And thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Any further discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, I have to say I echo both senators' viewpoints, and I think that this is a perfect opportunity for us to talk about this in the next session in terms of really looking at would it be appropriate at this time? What would be the benefits? What would be the negatives of privatizing OLCC? I'd like to see us move in that direction.
It's getting so exciting and about the conflicts down at this end that we're even taking off our shoes.
Getting ready to run.
Getting ready.
Further discussion on the issue. Representative Smith.
I don't have anything funny to say. I just wanted to add, thank you, Madam Coach. I just wanted to add my concurrence to Senator Morris. The business model with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission is antiquated and it needs to be updated, and I fully support his recommendation.
Further discussion? Senator Gordon?
Just briefly, that the services provided by the state of Oregon and supported through the legislative process, all those services are a reflection of our values as Oregonians. And so I, too, look forward to the discussion that Senator Morse is proposing, because it allows us the opportunity to examine or reexamine what are our values.
Further discussion? Any objection? Item number 48, Department of Administrative Services, Environmental Quality, and Human Services. Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other fund's capital construction expenditure limitation for the Department of Administrative Services by $8.5 million, increase the other fund's expenditure limitation for the Department of Environmental Quality by $630,000, and increase the other fund's expenditure limitation for the Department of Human Services by $630,000. The legislature previously approved $23.5 million in the Department of Administrative Services capital construction budget for the purchase and retrofit of a building to house a joint laboratory for the Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Human Services. The amount provided was less than the high-end estimate of retrofit cost, but more than the low-end estimate. Final plans were developed and the retrofit construction work was let out for bid. The bids have been received and one contractor has been selected. However, the bids received exceed the expenditure limitation provided, and DAS requested additional expenditure limitation of $9,500,000 for debt issuance costs and $8,500,000 for the building retrofit. Certificates of participation will provide the other fund's revenue for the debt issuance costs and to complete the retrofit. retrofit. DAS already has sufficient other funds expenditure limitation for the debt issuance costs and only needs the additional $8.5 million. As part of this request, DEQ and DHS are asking for expenditure limitation of $630,000 each to pay their share of the costs of furniture, fixtures, and equipment for the building. Total FF&E costs for each are estimated at about $830,000. However, $200,000 each for FF&E is included as part of the DAS construction contract, and each department needs only an additional $630,000 expenditure limitation. As with the retrofit, COPs are the source of the other fund's revenue. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp?
Unless my math is off, first of all, I'm uncomfortable with us being that far off, needing $8.5 million to fix this, to establish this new building. Now, I believe it's necessary, and I think we have to do this for a whole host of reasons, but I have to tell you that if my math is correct, that's over 30% increase in the cost of this project. And this relates to what is going to be item number 50, which I'll talk about in terms of scenic. The quality of the information we're getting when we're making management decisions, funding decisions, here at the state level during the session, I mean, 30% increase is huge. And I'm sure there's some justification for it, but I'm very uncomfortable with how this process plays out. It seems like this happens over and over and over again. And if you're sensing a bit of frustration in my voice with the quality of information we get sometimes when we're trying to make these important decisions during the session, I am. And I guess as a form of protest, I'm going to be a no on this, because I just 30% increase in the projected cost of this project, I don't think that's a good thing, and I don't think it's appropriate the way this is happening.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Morgan.
If I might just address Representative Krupp's concern, that issue was also raised and discussed extensively in the subcommittee. It jumped out at all of us, too. And the answer that we got back was that during the legislation, the process of the legislature, the costs that were brought forward at that time were only an estimate, and there was not sufficient time to finalize the costs of it. And so this was essentially a placeholder in the budget with instruction for the department to return to the emergency board when they had finalized all of the cost estimates. So the cost that was put in the budget was not ever intended to be the final cost of the project.
Well, Madam Chair, if I may respond, okay. I can appreciate that. I guess what I would be asking for then in the future is perhaps a tighter range that we would consider that the project's costs may vary in. And again, I have some difficulty, I guess, approaching this from a business standpoint. If I were to look at doing this in private sector, I think I would want to have my costs a great deal more nailed down than what's almost 36 or 37% increase. So perhaps in the future we can denote that with a range so that we don't have these sort of surprises, I guess, in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Very quickly.
Thank you, Madam
Co-Chair. I'll be casting a yes vote on this. But colleagues, one of the concerns I raised yesterday in subcommittee was the location of this building. I'm just absolutely convinced that this body needs to put a little more effort into trying to look at where pockets of need are around the state of Oregon and then place new construction in those pockets of need, particularly economic need. And while I know we have an obligation to maintain the taxpayers' dollars in the most fiduciary way possible, I do think that we need to create a system where we're putting new projects in those communities with the greatest need. And while I know Hillsborough, the area that will house this building, has its challenges. I would contend there's a much greater economic need in other parts of Multnomah, Washington, or Clackamas County where this building could be located. And the economic spinoff that's going to come from this building for the Main Street businesses that surround this is going to be tremendous. And I just think, you know, on one hand, we're putting millions and millions of dollars into economic development. And then on the other hand, we have a perfect opportunity to stimulate economic development, and we pass it up. And to me, I think that's short-sighted.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Any objection?
So noted.
Representative Krupp, no? Item 49, Department of Administrative Services. Senator Hart.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation for the Department of Administrative Services by $5,760,000 for increased fuel costs. The Department's budget for 2005-07 was finalized before the end of calendar year 2004 and adopted mid-2005 without any adjustment for changes that were then occurring in the price of fuel at the pump. The number of gallons of fuel dispensed through February 2006 is about 7,000 gallons less than the same period the prior year. Upwardly gyrating fuel costs, however, have caused the department's fuel costs to almost double from the budgeted amount. The department is requesting that its other funds expenditure limitation be increased by $5,760,000 to pay for the increased cost of fuel this biennium. Nationwide, the cost of fuel is an issue. The department cannot control other agency fuel consumption needs. It attempts to help mitigate the impact of price increases through bulk purchases for state and local government use. It needs the additional expenditure limitation to continue this activity. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection?
Yes.
Item 50, Department of Administrative Services, General Government Sub, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $835,547, transfer $4,096,079 in other funds expenditure limitation from the Information Resources Management Division to the State Data Center, approve the establishment of 56 full-time permanent positions, which equates to 28 FTE for the State Data Center operations, and request the Department of Administrative Services to reschedule $42,218,000 other funds expenditure limitation for the State Data Center operations, with the additional understanding that the Department of Administrative Services will abolish 5 permanent and 74 limited duration positions, which equate to 25.88 FTE, and provide monthly progress reports to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology and to the Emergency Board. The new State Data Center Administrator has suggested substantial changes to the staffing plan approved by the legislature. The changes to the staffing plan and this request have been reviewed and approved by the 12 agencies involved in the consolidation. This request was thoroughly reviewed by the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology April 4th, and the JLC-IMT has recommended approval. A great deal of concern has been expressed about the department and governing board's change to the plan brought forward to the legislature last year. The director of the department presented the JLC-IMT co-chairs and myself with a detailed schedule of the consolidation. The director committed to provide monthly status reports to this board and the JLC-IMT. The subcommittee reviewed the agency request and the JLC-IMT recommendation. We concur with the JLC-IMT recommendation and added the understanding that the department would submit monthly reports. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
I'm sure there's going to be discussion on this. Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I dissented in the committee vote on this for a couple of reasons. But first of all, let me say that I'm a supporter of the concept and the idea that we should consolidate operations. And there's a lot of good reasons to do that. Chief among them, security, besides efficiency issues. But it's, I guess, and I would say on the, and I don't know, Senator Morse, feel free to chime in here, but I think there's a healthy dose of skepticism as to how this process has played out, based on the way the information was given to us during the session, and by virtue of the fact that, frankly, I think there's a sentiment on the committee that some share, I know I am, that I have a certain level of suspicion and distrust with how this project, not as currently being managed, but how the information in the process has gotten to where it is today. I have great praise for Director Lindsey Ball. He is a man that I have learned to trust in this process on the agency side. And if there is one person that I believe in state management that can pull this thing off and make it happen on time, on budget, it's him. But I will tell you that I also believe in Ronald Reagan's dictum of trust but verify. And in that regard, we have reserved a couple of $100,000 in the budget for the process of the legislature putting an RFP out there for a quality assurance contractor to look over the shoulder of DAS's quality assurance contractor to make certain that this project really does come in on time and on budget. Because I don't think anyone wants to see another DMV computer issue, especially we on the legislative side. This is as much our responsibility as it is the administrative side. And secondarily, I was concerned, truly, when I asked the director, Director Ball, if he was happy with his contract, because there have been a number of modifications to their contract on this project that DAS, thankfully, has come forward and demanded. And frankly, his answer was very telling. He said basically that they're fulfilling the terms of the contract. And everyone on the committee, I thought that was very clear what he was meaning. And that causes me some concern, and that is why I think it is imprudent that we go forward with an RFP as a legislative body to hire a quality assurance contractor to make sure that this process plays out as it is, that is being now presented to us, which is a pretty substantial change. So in that regard, I think that one of the reasons I objected, Madam Speaker, especially to the rescheduling of $42 million to finalize this project, because I think it's premature. I'd like to see us have a report from our quality assurance contractor first before we approve those dollars in the process. Otherwise, there's no point spending the money. And I think we need to do this. And I think it's healthy. I think it's good for accountability. And I think it's, more importantly, good to the restoration of trust between the legislature and the administration on how this process played out. And so, and that sort of relates to my previous frustration I shared with the committee regarding the previous issue. So I'm going to be a no on this for that very important reason. I really think that we should hire our own QA person and report back to the legislature before we expend any more money. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Thank you. Further discussion? Senator Schrader?
A question for the carrier. I'd asked in some discussions with the staff about agency coming forward with a simple little graphic chart that showed what the original projections were in terms of timeline, savings, and FTE, and then, you know, what was talked about at the end of session, and then what the current picture looks like. Did the committee receive that information?
We did receive a number of graphics. I also, in addition, we could have staff come forward and address that issue. I also requested a timeline for the implementation of the revised plan, and that was the basis of the request to have a report to the Information Management Committee and also to the e-board every month to make sure that the project is unfolding to the revised timeline and the revised standards, and that if it does deviate, that we will know in very short order and can have a discussion around that.
Thank you. I would be interested in seeing that graph. I remember there's some pretty easy graphics for even a little country boy like me to understand and grasp, and that's something I could put in my folder and just kind of track over time.
Let Mr. Wran address that issue.
All right, sure.
We can provide that to you. It was provided on Tuesday to the JLCIMT, and again, the subcommittees can provide that
Final comment, if I may, Madam Chair. I have some of the same concerns that Representative Krupp has, and I think it's real important that this project. And nothing's ever perfect, but I think there's a reason to watch the project a little bit. A lot's riding on this. Hopefully a lot of positive things are riding on this. We want to make sure this does work out. So I have some of the same concerns.
Thank you, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Our committee on Tuesday, the Joint Committee on Information, whatever it is, KCLN, whatever.
Whatever it is.
These acronyms. Anyway, Information Management Technology Committee. It was kind of tough sledding in that committee, and I had the opportunity to go into Dallas's office following that meeting, what was a day later, to get a better appreciation for some of the issues. The decisions we have made clearly are good decisions. This data consolidation is a very, very good thing. Generally, I think the project is on track. Even though they show that the return on the investment is not what was anticipated, it is still a good return on investment. Now, that having been said, I think there are three issues that are worthy of further review by this body. One is the transition and the timing of transition from existing staff to what would be considered to be a normal operation once they've lifted everything in and dropped it in this center. I made the comment that from my perspective, just a business perspective, the transition is so critical because we cannot afford to have mistakes and operations that fail. I mean, it absolutely cannot happen. So to have buy extra insurance to make sure that the staffing is there and everything operates the way it should be, to me that's a small sacrifice to pay in the short term. In the longer term, where I have problems is when we had an original projection of 72 full-time operating staff to then have it now be 101 staff, that raises questions. Well, why? Well, we have more servers than we anticipated. That's one reason. We have more operation requirements that have been explained to us. But I do have concerns about that, and I think it's something we should follow up on in the future to make sure that that transition time and the number of staff are, in fact, appropriate. The third issue, and it hasn't been the subject of this agenda item, but it's relevant to this discussion, is you'll recall that we appropriated $22.8 million for security measures. And now we have a major portion of that security, and Dallas, I would hope that you would fill in the blanks here, but we have a major portion of that security effort that is now incorporated in the state data center. So we've spent $8 million of the 22.8. That leaves $14 million for security interests, but yet 85% of the state's data computing is in the 12 agencies that are now in the state data center. And that security will be part of the state data center operations. So it leaves the question open with respect to the remaining $14 million and where those dollars will be spent. And I think this is an agenda item that hopefully will come forward again and again through the Joint Committee on Legislative Committee on Information Management Technology and ultimately to the e-board until we go into the session. So those are the issues as I see them. Again, we've made the right decision. And these decisions are never, when we create budgets and plans, they're never perfect. There will always be variations. But within those variations, I think we need a higher degree of oversight, and hopefully we will have that into the future. And Dallas, I would ask you to fill in the blanks as you see them if I've misstated some of these critical issues.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, essentially the issue of security is an ongoing one, and I think there was some confusion in the committee about who had a certain responsibility for security. The funds that have been provided for security actually come from two different areas. There was a $14.8 million that are one-time costs that is expected to be for consulting fees and hardware and software. That part is still yet playing out. There's another portion of ongoing security costs that are funded from assessments to agencies. Some of that now is being moved to the data center. So much of the hardware and additional software may ultimately reside in there. How that plays out should be before the Joint Legislative Committee and Information Management Technology. We're planning to discuss that with the co-chairs to get it on the next agenda, too. So it was presented in this last meeting. We expect to follow up on that so that the committee has a very good and clear understanding of what the funds are buying and what we expect to get for it, not only currently, but in the future.
Dallas, could you explain the FTE issue? Because I think members at the end of session were under the impression that agencies were going to give the FTEs for this project, but as it turns out, that didn't happen. Could you kind of explain what that's
Madam Chair, certainly. The number of FTE that were provided for or that were to be phased out was 155. Not FTE. Let me just use positions. I think that'll be a little easier to understand. 155 identified positions in 12 state agencies were to be phased out. They were to be replaced by 93 positions. We're talking full-time permanent positions at state data center. They expected to do transition activities using limited duration position authority, more from a way to control and identify costs that are associated with a one-time transition cost. Those transition activities now, under this current scenario, will be performed by the new permanent position staff. The additional 56 positions add up to 149 over the 93 that we added. That equates to the 155 we're phasing out, not equates, but that supplants the 155 that are phased out. In addition, there were seven security positions that were provided for in 0507. They're now moved and part of the 149. So we would compare 162 positions that we provided for or that were to included in budgets for 0507 that will be phased out, eliminated by the end of this biennium. They are replaced now with 149 at the end of this biennium in the data center. Those positions, the 149, by the end of the 07-09 biennium, will be reduced to 124 positions, excuse me. The transition time is, under the new administrator, is extended beyond what was in the original budget and plan. And those transition activities are being carried out by full-time or permanent positions that will be phased out, although not all of them, whereas we had originally provided limited duration position authority. That's the reason for requesting the Department of Administrative Services to eliminate the position authority that we had established during the session. Did that address it? We will not get to the point that it was originally promised.
Yeah.
Under this plan, in effect, at the very end of it, all said and done, 162 positions that were phased out will be replaced by 101 in the data center. So a net reduction over a longer period of time of 61.
Okay. Are these new people coming in, or are we transferring folks from agencies over to the centralized system?
Madam Chair, technically, and I don't like to use that word, they are new positions because they're in a new facility. The first and second round of they're offered first to people who have positions that will be eliminated. So they've worked with the bargaining units on this, and there's they throw a wider net if they can't fill the positions for the data center out of the existing pool in the agencies that will be replaced. They expand the pool to all staff in those agencies, and then the pool's expanded further. But the first cut at the first bite at those positions are positions that are staff whose positions are being eliminated.
Thank you. Further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Krupp.
A couple of things that I want to clarify here. First is to compliment the agency of building the building cheaper than what they had anticipated. They actually saved about $1.4 million in the $20 million. Actually, it's about 1.7. It's 20.3. The question we ask, however, is where is that extra money? Because they issued the COPs for the full amount, so we're asking, okay, where is the amount of money that you didn't expend? I think we should know that, first of all. And secondly, you should also understand that these quote-unquote one-time transition costs, and this relates to the way that this was sold to us and how we think about this. Because it was, this whole idea was sold to us partly because of the efficiencies and that it would pay for itself over time. And if you accept that proposition, then you have to understand that there are some one-time transition costs that will lead to efficiencies down the road. Those one-time transition costs are listed in your documentation in front of you in your binder. But it's actually a little more than the $38 million. It's actually $43 million because we spent in 2003-05 $5.1 million to start this process. Okay? Now, you also have to consider the cost of the building. Now, I sat after the hearing for an hour with Dallas and Lindsay and a lot of Lindsay's financial people going round and round about this. The only way that the building really pays for itself is if the agencies, when they pick up a mainframe out of one location and put it in the new data center, and they're going to pay rent when an agency puts their mainframe into a new data center. Okay? They're going to pay rent for that. The only way this building pays for itself is if the area that they now have vacant, where they pulled the mainframe out of, is that agency is no longer paying lease for. Because if they keep it, then really they're paying double rent. And the building doesn't pay for itself. Okay? Now, DAS has no control over that. You must understand that, because that will be a decision on an agency-by-agency basis as to what they do with that. Now, some of them may say, all right, if I've got a vacant floor here, I want to bring in some of my people that are in other leased space and put them in our building. That makes sense. But what that means is that some other leased space will then become available. Now, how hard is this going to be able to track? Extremely, because what if we increase the budgets of some of these agencies and they do a normal expansion of hiring new employees? You see how convoluted this gets? The one-time transition cost could really be $43 million, or they could be $64 million. In any event, I'm not fully convinced that this project will ever, quote-unquote, pay for itself. However, I think there's a lot of benefit in doing this if we do it right. And I go back again to the point that we must make sure that this thing is done right.
Thank you, Representative. Further discussion? Item 51, Department of Administrative Services, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Colleagues, the General Government Subcommittee recommends that the Emergency Board increase the other funds expenditure limitation by $6,625,469, with the understanding that the Budget and Management Division will unschedule $2 million and reschedule it as necessary to accommodate the business volume of e-forms requests. The Information Resource Management Division has a number of ongoing activities and costs for which it is seeking additional other funds expenditure limitation. Revenue sources to pay for the additional costs have been identified. One activity, however, has an unknown cost and revenue. That is, other agency demand for contract services for e-forms. The demand for development of interactive forms for use with e-government programs has only been estimated at $2 million. Various agencies that use the service will pay IRMD, which will then pay the contract vendor. The subcommittee is recommending approval of the request with the understanding that the department's budget and management division will unschedule the $2 million and reschedule it as necessary to accommodate the business volume of e-forms. The General Government Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Objection. Item number 52, Legislative Council Committee.
Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. The Education Subcommittee recommends the Emergency Board allocate $183,778 from the Emergency Fund for the establishment of one permanent full-time position and to provide funding for one existing permanent full-time unfunded position. The committee also recommends deferring formal action on the reclassification of five positions, but instructing the agency to provide appropriate workout of class and title designation for five positions pending a complete position and compensation review. The newly appointed Legislative Council has begun a review of the current staff structure and workload and has established a goal of having more than one subject matter expert in each area of drafting to better serve the legislature, deal with peak workload periods, and ensure there is expertise in the office even if there is a staff turnover. There is currently some potential for turnover due to anticipated retirements. It also became clear that some staff are performing work that is not part of their current classification. It was noted that a compensation review, which will include the positions in question, is underway, but is not yet complete. Pending the completion of the review, Legislative Council should take steps to ensure staff are being paid appropriately and are assigned appropriate work titles without permanently reclassifying positions at this time. The subcommittee acknowledged the workload and compensation issues experienced by Legislative Council. The subcommittee directed that an increase in staff be accomplished by performance measures, including monitoring turnaround time and drafting errors. The Education Subcommittee recommends approval.
Further discussion? Any objection? And last but not least, item number 53, Legislative Administration Committee. Senator Schrader.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Education Subcommittee advances with no recommendation the request to increase the other fund's expenditure limitation by $968,453 for the legislative bill draft. Further, the subcommittee recommends that the agency return to the November meeting of the Emergency Board with a report on the progress of this project in accordance with the actions taken by the full Emergency Board. For the last two biennia, the legislature has been engaged in technology transition program to replace existing mainframe application systems with open systems technology. The 2005-07 legislative adopted budget included $894,037 in general fund and other funds expenditure limitation of $2,015,000 for the issuance of certificates of participation for the legislative bill drafting system, which is the final piece of this transition. Since the budget was adopted, the Legislative Administrative Committee, Information Systems Division, and the Legislative Council Committee have worked together to examine and evaluate options for the new system. Project team developed requirements and issued both a request for qualifications and subsequently a request for proposals. Vendors, demonstrations, and scoring have been completed. A preliminary selection has been made, and the team is preparing to begin contract negotiations. Decision on which vendor selected and the final contract negotiations will be taken before both the Legislative Council Committee and the Legislative Administration Committee. Based on the work completed since the end of session, it's clear that the cost will exceed the original estimate. It's now estimated that the project cost for the preferred vendor will be approximately $4.3 million to be financed with COPs, which will be repaid over four biennia. Of that total amount, $2.86 million is expected to be needed this biennia, requiring an increase in the other fund's expenditure limitation of $968,453. However, there are projected debt service savings for the 2005-07 biennium of $68,832 of general fund, which the agency should set aside for potential reversion for use during the 07-09 biennium. Education Subcommittee discussed the need to replace the current system but expressed extreme concern regarding the scope and cost of the project. Subcommittee believed the full Emergency Board should discuss these issues, advance the item with no recommendation, but with the direction the agency should report to the Emergency Board at its November meeting on its progress in fulfilling the direction of the full Emergency Board. I guess I'd just add, Madam Chair, that there have been a lot of discussion about cost estimates, particularly with regard to technology and construction today, and this is another example where we were way off the mark. We were 30% off in the other one. We're 100% off on this one. And while I think that there's some mitigating circumstances potentially, I think that it still bears close scrutiny by this body as we move forward. We certainly want to help our hardworking LC people. They work harder than we do, and there's very few people, I think, that work harder in this body when the session's in progress, and that group and frankly, the legislators here. But I think we still have to be very accountable. If we're asking every other agency to be accountable, the state legislature has to be accountable, too, within its own shop, and we need to just bear close scrutiny and make sure things work out. And I would add that it says here in the pony about taking before the Legislative Council Committee and Legislative Administration Committee, I'd like to make sure that legislative leadership's kept in touch with exactly what we're buying. Why is vendor, the most expensive vendor, better than the second most expensive vendor, and is that something that we really want to purchase? Maybe it is. But that was not discussed at length in the JLCIMT committee and needs to be discussed, I think, before we move forward with the purchase. Thank you.
Further discussion?
Well, Madam Chair, I would respectfully disagree with the Senator's last statement. We've talked about this pretty extensively. I think Senator Morse, we had considerable conversation with why they chose this particular vendor. Having said that, I have a real problem with the additional expenditure here and the expanded scope of this project. I also understand that we ask a whole lot of these people, a lot, during the session, and they work some bloody long hours on our behalf. And the system they use, if any of you have ever been down there and looked at that system, I don't know how they do what they do. I'm pretty impressed with the quality of their work. But I got to tell you, I got to remain consistent here on this particular issue. We've got to have better information in the future when we're making decisions like this session. And I don't know how we get there, Madam Chair, but we've really got to do something here. But I'm going to be a no vote.
You know, I think on that point, when we ask for an estimate costs, people need to put more work and to bring in a number forward and
That's
don't
right.
just guess.
That's right.
Because we base our budgets on that information and, you know, then we have these kinds of scenarios. You can't just guess. You have to go out and do some work. And it's not just this project. As you've heard, it's been on several. Don't guess. Go do some, get some estimates that make sense and make it a lot closer to this. This is happening far too often. And when we have the press at the Legislative Assembly and things are drawn to close and we're trying to balance these budgets and we allocate funds based on the information that's given to us, it is very difficult when we have to come back and I know sometimes prices change,
yeah.
But this was off by far. I think somebody didn't do their homework well enough on this particular issue. We're on a few of them this morning.
Matt, just very, very briefly, I would just say that if people were just guessing, some of these estimates would come in twice as high as the real cost, we'd be going down. So they need to be doing better guessing if they're going to guess.
So we can praise them, right?
Yeah, right.
Senator
yeah.
Morse?
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I've been one who has followed this through the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management Technology, and then it has come to the Education Subcommittee of the E-Board and now here. It is very, very clear that listening to the need, we do need to upgrade our system, absolutely, without question. That's a given. In our Information Management Technology Committee, we listened, and I thought, you know, you just swallow hard. And then I began reflecting in the time between that meeting and our e-board subcommittee just to try to put it into context of things that I am familiar with. We have a healthcare organization that I have chaired and been currently on the board. We went through a major IT, a totally new IT system, $400 million in revenue, 4,000 employees, 120 docs, and 5 hospitals. We had bids to deliver this service that ranged from about $7 million to $13 million. And when you put that in the context of that large and complex of an organization for electronic medical records and information technology, and then bring it back and try to put this in that context of very few people, the very specific activities at a cost of $4.3 million. It's just very hard to have a sense of what we're doing. And so My problem is, and I think we all share this, is a lack of information and understanding of if we are going to spend this, is it in fact what we truly need? And I would be very comfortable to advance this today in the context that legislative leadership has the opportunity to be engaged in this ongoing selection of this vendor versus the one that, and this needs to be explained possibly for the benefit of the full committee, the selection alternatives and what they offer, what they and what the costs are. But it's just, it's so hard to put this much money for such a small group of people in context for me. And that's kind of where I reside on this issue. But I'm very comfortable moving forward to put a new system in. That's obvious that we need that.
I would request the council come back in June and report to the keyboard about your progress and where things are at. And certainly the presiding officers will work with you as well. Further discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Richardson and Senator Winters.
To add a little to what Senator Morris has said, you know, every other state has similar capacity. Now, they may do things a little bit differently, and many states have recently upgraded their systems as well. And so as we've looked at this, and I haven't been a part of this process, but I've been talking with those that have, they've looked at other states and what they're doing, but they end up with pages and pages of what we do differently here in Oregon. And so instead of being able to say we want to buy word, which is off the shelf, we're saying we'd like to have a word processing system like Word, except here's 100 other things we want you to change in it, and so go rewrite the system so that it'll fit the way we've been doing it in the past. Well, that changes the value tremendously. And so it seems to me that rather than just merely look at what's going to cost a few million more than what was expected, maybe we ought to look at what is being done elsewhere with the idea of what can we transition in the way that we do it so that it lines up with some of these other states that have gone through all this, instead of us being our own beta, where we have to essentially rewrite our own, a whole new system for us, and then try it out and see if it's going to work or not work, when other states have already done this and gone through the process, and we may have to change our procedures a little bit in the way we've done it in the past, but what's wrong with that as long as we get to where we need to be?
I can answer that question, Madam Chair.
Well, can we go to Senator? Well, go ahead.
Go ahead, Kurt.
Well, I think the representative makes a good point, and I think that's a point actually in favor of this project, because the original plan, as you may or may not remember, was to generate an in-house thing from the ground up. And as they looked at this, they found out, and they testified at our hearing, that just within the last year or two, California and Pennsylvania have gone to vendors, an off-the-shelf, if you will, type of program. There are apparently very few of these. These are the only two that have been identified that were of any reputability at all, and they were very, very, very new. So that's when they began to, after they actually did attend the big NCSL conference, talked to a whole bunch of states, just like you talked about, and decided that rather than recreate the world in their own image entirely, that they would try and go with one of these two vendors. And so to me, the bigger issue that for us is, I guess you could say, do we want to start from scratch again, like that was the original proposal the legislative body came up with? So it's a little difficult, I think, for that one little three-person subcommittee to say, no, change it. That's why we pushed it to you all deferentially as a few more members of the state legislature. It seemed like the real question is between which two vendors do we go with. I will say that the excellent work done by staff has us allocating only the money that's necessary. We need to go for regardless of which vendor we end up picking at the end. So I do agree that we could move forward here today, probably recommend that, just that prescribed amount of $968,453, and then make sure perhaps at June, if that's the chair's pleasure, come back, have them come back in June to the board and report the latest progress with a little bit more information along the lines of how much of the bells and whistles for our particular program are you buying, and do we need to have all those? That's exactly the discussion we had in our subcommittee, sir. So you're right.
I have nothing more to add. Just want to concur with good Senator Schrader.
Thank you.
Winters. Further discussion? Representative Smith.
Thank you. Colleagues, I'm not sure if our pencil's dull or if we're not giving our staff the ability to have a good sharpener to sharpen the pencil. And what I mean by that is the need for a new type of application is there. But I think it's incumbent upon us to also work with staff to let them know the type of information we need. Because every one of us asks them different types of questions and have different types of demands for information. Some of us get right down into the micro parts of our questions, while others of us stay at a macro level. And I think it'd be very incumbent upon us as we move forward to have some type of small little subcommittee that works with LFO and with the rest of our partners to determine the type of information we do want and we do need, so that way we get the best possible program.
Further discussion. It wasn't, just so we know, this wasn't LFO staff that put...
No.
I just want to say that.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Further discussion.
You want to say something?
Madam Chair, just for procedural reasons again, what Senator Schrader just stated, if you could put that in the form of a motion, it would be very helpful.
That, Madam Chair, if you're ready at this point. I guess I would like to move that we approve the request for an increase in other funds expenditure limitation by just the $968,453 for the legislative bill drafting project, and that the agency return to the June meeting of the emergency board with a report on the progress of the project, and also legislative leadership in accordance with the actions taken by this body here today.
Further discussion? Any objections?
I have one item. Does this delay for 2.5 months delay the progress in the whole project?
It could be no, because we're allocating the $968,000.
Okay, so it wouldn't delay entering into a contract to actually move ahead.
They'd be able to move forward. Garrett, let's have Teresa ask that. I don't want to miss it.
Madam Chair, Representative Richardson, it would allow them to continue moving forward, and they, of course, will appear before both the Legislative Administration Committee and the Legislative Council Committee before they actually sign a contract.
Thank you.
And you are a no, Representative Krupp? Any other no's?
Madam Chair?
Senator Gordon, I have a brief
item just for the good of the order. It's a request to the Department of Administrative Services. I'd like some documentation on the recent hiring process for the executive to support the four advocacy commissions. I understand that was a failed process and that there is a need to start the process over. I'd like us to understand why that needs to happen, why do we need to start over. Also, the commissions, it's my understanding the commissions have no staff support. How long is it going to take to fill this position? It's been 8 months now since the legislative session ended, and since we reconfigured the commission, I'm concerned that the commissions are not getting the administrative support that they need and deserve so that they can do their work on behalf of the constituencies they represent. And again, I just want to know, I want answers to those questions. I want us to have the answers to the questions. And I also want to know where this fits in the agency's overall priorities. And again, this is a request. I'm asking that the information come not just back to me and my office, but to this body. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Further discussion, Representative Hanna.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, this is a new issue.
All right.
Is that fine?
Sure.
Madam Co-Chair, as it relates to Item 17, Commission for the Blind, in yesterday's subcommittee, I announced a potential conflict there as I'm a member of an LLC that provides contracted service and vending service to agencies who contact directly with Commission for the Blind. In this project, I would have no direct financial linkage.
Do we know the senator or representative? Any other discussion on any other topic or program? With that, we are adjourned.